Welcome to the Warren Hills, and we're grateful to anyone to see you for us as you came on this meeting this afternoon. Welcome to the 599th meeting of the Los Angeles Water Quality Board, which means that it's tomorrow's
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes, Ms. Marshall, Ms. Diamond,
here.
Ms. Whitfield,
here.
Ms. Munoz,
here.
Mr. Stringer,
here.
And Ms. Brown,
here.
Mr. President, Board of Agenda.
Yes, there's one slide change to the order of the agenda. Tomorrow we are planning to be public comment period, but we have one public commenter here today who cannot be in the meeting tomorrow. Christine Rowe, and my suggestion is that we hear her testimony and her public comment after the uncontested items calendar. So we'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We understand that she's agreed to 5 minutes of public comment, and then we'll get into the item 6 and 7. Okay, so Ross, can you help
Ms. Brown?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Board member, can you please respond to Mr. Barry?
I didn't have a
comment. I'm sure that I know that one of the cases report, but I should mention that independent of my role in sport, I have been working with ad hoc citizens of the Ohio Valley. Looking at a very dire water supply situation. They can see this from supplies. The valley and part of Ventura is down to 38% of that. And so this citizens group is becoming more active and building fires under our elected officials and water agency folks and to really raise the level of awareness amongst the citizens for much greater water conservation conditions. So I've been kind of working with that with this group.
Thank you.
As you know, for over a year, we have heard from many of the smaller cities and all cities about MS-1 compliance and our initiative that I'm calling the Chairs of the Clean Sessions, where we are going to small cities or any city school who wants to sit with me so I can listen to what their concerns are. And we've already had one. We had one in San Diego Valley with about 27 cities. Our executive officer, Mr. Mayne, and staff came to listen to clarify what was a lot of misunderstandings and confusion about the cannabis full permit. For me, it was really very important for me to listen to mayors, city council members, and city managers about their worries. As I told them, this is our issue. We need to work together. So if there's anything here that would like to be next on our agenda, I'd be more than happy to have that meeting scheduled so that we can meet in your area, and I'm asking you for John Johnson as well as you to you, so that we can sit and listen to what your concerns are. I know that Mr. Moore probably in his report is going to talk about another meeting we had with some folks last week of various cities as well. But it will be received very well. I was expecting actually a beat down. We had no beat downs there. It was a lot of good communication that we exchanged with information. So I'm very proud of initiating this and hoping to do more.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So I want to thank you for doing this. You know, I have been increasingly alarmed by newspapers and reports. And of course, reality often doesn't match the newspapers, and I'm glad to hear that. Anything that I can do or other members can do, if you need somebody to sit in for me or keep me down with this schedule, I would be happy to volunteer.
No, actually, I really encourage other board members to join in on these sessions. It really gives you a perspective that sometimes we've not heard here, you know, and for them to see us in a different light, that we're sitting listening and trying to understand and have a good exchange of communication. So, my apologies for not sending the invitation sooner, but the first one was kind of a pilot to see how we're going to, how it's going to be, and I think it went really well. And I think this is all about sort of the learning for us, you know, because it's not always going to be positive, but it will always be the best.
So you let us know.
Absolutely. Okay, uncontested items. Is there a motion for approval unless someone's going to have one item?
Second.
Roll call vote.
Ms. Diamond?
Yes.
Ms. Glickfeld?
Yes.
Ms. Munoz?
Yes.
Mr. Stringer?
Yes.
And Mr. Reed?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next is item 6, the petition, consideration of petition for review of the executive officer's action to approve the enhanced watershed management program for the North Santa Monica Bay pursuant to the LA.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, I went ahead of myself. There's another comment. Ms. Christine Rowe, please approach.
I got it. Thank you, Chair, and honorable board members. Each of you should have a copy of my letter, and I'm going to skip parts of it due to time. I would like to thank the Chair and the Executive Director for making it possible for me to be heard. On the issue of my appeal, as stated above, I have an important medical appointment tomorrow, and the chronic health problems prevent me from attending early morning meetings. I live within 1 mile of the UTC Rockefeller site. I work with the Woodland Hills Board of Senators and Council on this project with their new environment committee. Last year in December, Pigeon Board circulated their mitigated negative declaration and soil management plan for this project site, UTC Rockefeller. Within the constraints of the winter holidays, the Red Knight could prepare our committee and to take action on this project. But as a project compliant body, we lost quorum. The board cannot vote on the letter I drafted for me. As a result, 6 of the 12 comments on the MNP and SMP were for me. This year, the WHMC held elections on the Avenue Committee, in which only one member was around during that public comment process. July 21st, 2016, the approvals of the MND and SMP were circulated by the Mitchell Board staff. However, the large files of these documents were not uploaded until about July 26th. As I began to read these documents, I found errors of substance related more to my community than to water board related issues, and accepted I needed to appeal the final initial MND and SMP, and it took me until August 22nd to complete that appeal. At that time, I was not aware that the Department of Building and Safety had already issued up the demolition permit on August 9th. On about August 25th, I learned that the demolition had already begun, and a considerable amount of demolition had already occurred. Then again, I took my first of three walks around the UT side, and I provided over 600 photos to the executive director, two copies of them on the CD. This historic project site has been allowed to become urban and blight. If this project were in a residential area, neighbors would be complaining of code compliance regarding the lack of maintenance on the property site, particularly on the north and west sides of the property, and most specifically in the area of the former Building 38, which was a North American nuclear facility. While the water board references the release of Building 38 for unrestricted use and that the NRC inspected this facility before it was demolished in around 2005-2006, this is what a white paper stated, and I'm not going to about what it says. My point to the regional board, to the California Department of Health, Radiological Branch, and others, has been that surveying a room for unrestricted use at an industrial site in the 1990s does not clear the property below that facility as being clean. References have been made to accidents and spills in the structure, including a uranium fire. Former employees that I've interviewed that worked there were concerned about what went down the drains. Furthermore, this site is due for end use as mixed commercial and residential construction. It is extremely important to all of the elected officials, in my opinion, that they could say that the appropriate sampling is to be done on both the structures and the soil based on end use. Therefore, I have proposed the use of EPA guidance, which is based on risk to future residents. In the meantime, I've been contacting all the appropriate agencies for guidance on this project, with many unanswered questions related to this project. And I referenced the historical aspects. They're supposed to be doing a video. Why would the regional board issue an MND and SOP when, in my opinion, UTC site is non-compliant in terms of federal, state, and local laws, including the Clean Water Act, the Port of Colonial Water Quality Control Act, and local national NPDES requirements, and possibly MS for permits of the state of California. It is my opinion that the project lacks best management practice around its full perimeter in terms of dust mitigation fencing and wattles to protect against stormwater runoff, trash on the inside of the fence line and on the outside of the fence line, which will allow the sediment and trash to reach the storm drains in the next rain event. Therefore, the project could be in violation for TMDLs for trash, sediment, and potential leaching metals. In the photo by the Los Angeles Daily News, two workers are standing next to a crane and a stockpile of debris. They are not even wearing masks. Should these employees be wearing hazmat gear since all of these debris are going to landfills designated for hazardous waste? In my search for information, I've learned that there should be a dust mitigation plan that has been approved by the South Coastal Air Quality Control District for asbestos remediation for lead paint. Yet to date, I am able to put my hands on that document. It is my understanding that the removal of paint and asbestos is considered soft demolition. I do not know how these structures could have had their soft mitigation done when the demolition permits were just issued on August 9th. References are made in the SOP to pile height. What are the regulations regarding how large stockpiles can be on site? In summary, these are the 12 points I have submitted to elected officials for this project site. It is my opinion that we need the appropriate context posted at the site. The workers need to be in the appropriate protective gear. There may need to be.
Okay, if you'd like, the project manager for this camp, if there's any questions, as is Francis Jesse, who has been supplying legal advice to our team for this site that's going through redevelopment. So if not, we can and will be applying to the direct action.
Well, I'd like you to, Sam, if you could, to summarize what the concerns are. She had a lot of information there about concerns. Well, and I think what our role is, whether we're doing, what we need to be doing.
I have to focus on that.
Yeah, I'm not with Francis.
I'll come back first.
The site, the action that the board took was an action that the executive also took, you know, as a result of the story. And what this involves is there's a site that has several parcels, one of which is building 38. And that parcel has been totally almost cleaned up, the soil is cleaned up, and the staff issued a note of action for that property. This site, the recent approval was called, referred to as Building 1, and there's a property with Building 1 on it, and some associated buildings. And this property, the company submitted a request for approval, so now that they should test the soil, remove the soil, dispose of it at an appropriate place, and then they have to get permits from the city to demolish buildings. So the regional board, in coordination with the applicant, did a secret review and approved the mitigating declaration. And Anna can talk more about the facts of the situation, but some of the times, Ms. Grove was talking about Building 38 quite a bit in her comments, and Building 38 was not the subject of this action. This action was specifically to property that's building men on it, and the work, and, you know, in reviewing all the materials involving the site, the new standards are meeting health standards to protect the uses that are expected to occur. There's groundwater cleanup going on associated with the site, but that wasn't the subject of this action. So this action is specifically the soil management plan to approve removal of the soil. And it didn't involve any ambiguous comment, it didn't involve, you know, they have to do management practices to prevent soil runoff, and obviously, you know, they do the soil removal property, but there aren't ambiguous comment issues, there aren't stormwater issues, there aren't other issues that she's faced, and it might have involved another company, but that's not the subject of this action. And then, Ms. Rowe filed from the State Water Board. And the State Water Board has that petition, and the signing board does until the State Water Board gets. They decided to keep that petition, that directly reaching the board to provide any way. So that's how the State Water Board is going.
Any other comments or questions?
I would just say one other. Just one other comment. Our project manager, Pat Townsend, is here today. She was at the site yesterday. It was her impression. I don't think the report is written up yet, but that the mitigation measures in the EIR were being followed, and the OPHMD and the City of LA Fire Department are not inspecting the demolition of these buildings, so it can be accessed and removed, and the property comes to remains later. So.
And it wasn't an A declaration of the NR, but it did have mitigation associated with air emissions, with proper things with traffic controls, and as well as disposing of the waste properly.
And yes, welcome back. Just so thank you for seeing the comment from the chairman. Okay, this now we move on to item 6, which is the consideration of petition for review of the executive office action to improve the enhanced watershed management program for the North San Juan that they submitted to the Los Angeles Resources in this alternate. We are going to have our council general report item who will be speaking, we'll have Ms. Renee who will be speaking for 10 minutes. Senator Wildkeeper and NRC will be giving a joint presentation of 40 minutes. Board staff responses, outcome, blood control 10 minutes, and 2010, and residents' hearts. So we'll start with Ms.
This is Cass. That's yours?
They have also approved the North Carolina Bay Enhanced Scholarship Manager Program, which is the Los Angeles County Kids Program. The interesting item in this strategy is different than others who have experienced. You may recall that this board first considered a petition for review pertaining to approval of 9 large management programs, almost exactly what we're here today.
Speak up a little bit. Speak up.
Sorry, my mic's on the floor. Better?
Yeah.
So I'm going to start by briefly. So the process that the board is going to be using for today's consideration of petitions would be follow a somewhat similar format. I'm going to start by briefly introducing this item to provide you with some background context for what led us here today, summarize the contentions that were raised in the petition, and explain what your options are in your consideration today. For additional context, Wayne Curry will then provide background on the relationship of the North Sonoma Bay Enhanced Watershed Management Program, or what we call the North Sonoma Bay EWIMP, area to the Laguna Point to Latigo Point ASPS, which is also called the ASPS 24. Louder.
No, Lago.
Oh, sorry. Lago. As well as the ocean plan and the ASPS special protections and discharge requirements contains, including preparation of the ASPS compliance plan. This background is needed because of the centrality of the ocean plan and its ASPS provisions to the petition. The petitioners will then make their presentation on their petition since that is what the item the board is considering. After petitioners conclude with their presentation, responses to the petition will follow, starting with board staff. And board staff will provide a brief recap of the North Sonoma Bay EWIMP development, review, and approval process that was undertaken by board staff, including the executive officer, and then provide board staff responses to the specific contentions raised in the petition. The permittees that are part of the North Sonoma Bay EWIMP will then make their presentations responding to the petition, followed by any interested persons if there are any. So I'm going to start by providing very brief background context to explain the purpose of this item. On April 19, 2016, the executive officer on behalf of the board approved the North Sonoma Bay EWIMP pursuant to the LA County Youth Sport Permit. If you recall, Part 686 of the Los Angeles County Youth Sport Permit, which is the provision on the screen, provides that any formal determination or approval made by the executive officer pursuant to the permit may be reviewed by the regional board. A permittee or member of the public may request such review by filing a petition with the Ridge Board within 30 days of the notification of the executive officer's decision. This provision was included in the permit to address input received during permit development in light of the new watershed-based paradigm for permit implementation. And I want to say that it's at the regional discretion whether to review a petition and if so, how to resolve it. So about 30 days after the executive officer approved the North Sonoma Bay EWIMP on May 19, 2016, pursuant to the permit provision I just discussed, Los Angeles Waterkeeper and Natural Resources Defense Council, who I'll refer to collectively as the petitioners, filed a petition for the region board to review the executive officer's action to approve the North Sonoma Bay EWIMP. The petitioners did not challenge the executive officer's approval of any other EWIMPs except the North Sonoma Bay. The main contentions raised in this petition center around the fact that a substantial portion of the coastal zone in the North San Diego Bay EWIMP has special status as an area of special biological significance, or as an ASPS. Discharges to ocean waters in California are governed by not only the Regional Water Board's Basin Plan, but also by the Water Quality Control Plan for Ocean Waters of California, also known as the Ocean Plan. That statewide plan includes special protections for ASPSs and includes additional requirements for discharges to ASPSs, including MSO discharges. These ASPS special protections and additional requirements contained in the ocean plan are the focus of many of the petitioner's intentions. As with the requirements in our Los Angeles Basin Plan, the requirements of the ocean plan are implemented in various permits and other regulatory orders issued by the regional board, including the LA County MSO. So specifically, the petitioners alleged that the executive officer improperly approved the North Sonoma Bay EWIMP despite its failure to, 1, comply with the relevant terms of the LA County Explorer Permit, 2, comply with the conditions of State Board Resolution Number 2012-0012, also known as the ASPS exceptions,
And three, consider relevant, available ASPS stormwater and non-stormwater data and to comply with the ASPS exceptions prohibition against non-stormwater discharges. What the petitioners are seeking through their petition is an order by the Regional Board to invalidate the Executive Offer's April 19, 2016 approval of the North Sound IPD plan, and an order remanding the matter with instructions for staff to require compliance with the permit requirements. It's important to note that while the petitioners seek an order invalidating the Executive Offer's approval of the North Sound IPD plan as a whole, the petitioners only specifically take issue with how the EWIP addresses M4 discharges to the ASPS portion of the EWIP. So as I said last time, I know the board is accustomed to seeing an options slide at the end of a presentation, but I wanted to include it up front so you know what options you have today to hear from the petitioners, the permittees, and any interested persons. So I want to first note that there are no legal requirements or established procedures for a board's review of this executive option action. As such, you have a lot of flexibility in your consideration of the petition. If you recall from a few slides ago concerning Part 686 of the permit, the purpose of the petition is to request the Regional Board review the Executive Officer approval. Thus, after hearing from the petitioners, board staff, the permittees, and any other interested persons, the board is only expected to decide whether to, one, either review the petition on its merits, which will occur at a subsequent board meeting, or two, not review the petition on its merits. And if the board decides not to review the petition on its merits, there's not going to be any further Regional Board proceedings on the petition. To aid the board in making an informed decision as to whether to review the petition or not, responses to the petition and documents pertaining to the North Sound IPD were provided to you in advance of the board meeting. Responses to the petition include written responses by board staff to the contentions raised in the petition, as well as responses prepared by the City of Malibu, the County of Los Angeles, and Los Angeles County Flood Control District, from a joint and board letter, and from geosyntech consultants who work on the North Sound IPD with the permittees. Lastly, in a typical board proceeding, board staff normally make a recommendation to you as your advisors. In this matter, staff and legal counsel will be as your advisors. However, as a staff's action that you are reviewing, staff are not going to make a separate recommendation to you on this matter. The purpose of staff's presentation and responses is to explain the EWIP review and approval process and why the executive office determined that approval of the North Sound IPD EWIP in light of the contentions raised to the petitioners was in the petition was appropriate. I'm now going to turn over to Renee to discuss more about the Ocean Plan and ASBS 24, so you guys have context for further discussions. And if you have any questions, you can ask now.
Ms. Madden. This is rather unusual. We have one of these before, but I want to make sure I understand what the meaning of the boards has to focus on in making this decision. We don't have a staff recommendation. So basically what we're deciding is whether the petition has merits or doesn't have merits. Is that true?
Absolutely.
When you say decide to review the petition on its merits, then decide whether it has any merit.
Yes.
So we wouldn't be deciding anything about what to do with the petition. We'd be deciding whether it has merits and then do what? Direct staff to do what?
Probably a little bit different than last time is the last time we had a petition that challenged 9 large genetic programs, and obviously we couldn't have 9 separate board proceedings. We did address them together, and we did feel like the state board when the state board adopted the water quality order addressing the petition on the permit, there were certainly some statements from certain state board members that basically insinuated that, okay, Regional Board, you're expected to take up this petition. So really, we did feel like we needed this process. Here, we're only talking about one EWIP, so it's very, very able to focus. And due to the timing on the petition, and I think as I mentioned to you before, the petition acts both as a state board petition, and that's petition from the state boards in advance, and the state boards will be able to see what you guys are going to be doing. So the reason why we did this is we wanted to provide certainty to both petitioners and the state board as to is the Regional Board going to review this petition or not. And there wasn't enough time to be able, this originally was a one-day board meeting, and so we did have this half day, which we're also, you know, we're trying to get a lot done. What we're asking today is just to focus on whether you guys want to review the petition or not. And part of that consideration is, does the petition have merit that you would like to review? Are there things that you want to hear more about? Or do you have questions that can't be answered today? So those are the kinds of considerations I've been thinking of. And if you guys do want to review the petition, then likely it'll probably be brought back either November or December, and we can focus on more in detail that you guys want to hear about.
During the interim, if we decide on review, does it have any impact on the standing of this particular water management? What's the status? Do they go out of compliance?
No, until you guys make a determination, until you have permanently made an action overturning the executive action, the FEMA is still in place.
And then the last question, which is assuming we do all of this, which is the big assumption, what happens if we find for petitioner in this field, we accept it and find for the petitioner, does the forest and direct the discharger to ameliorate the problems, or do they fall into the do-go-back-to-the-mills situation? Do we have to basically push them off the cliff, or do we have a way of fixing this?
So there's no one answer, and this is probably those types of questions are probably would be better addressed if you guys do decide to take up the petition, and then we figure out November, December, what board to do that. Like I said, there's no process for this, so we're kind of making that along the way, trying to provide fairness for everybody. So in terms of what ultimately could happen theoretically, like I said, the E-Link has part of it, there's an ASBS portion, there's a non-ASBS portion. So theoretically, if you find that the petition has merit and you believe that the executive office approval was inappropriate, perhaps there's a way to separate the E-Link portion, the ASBS portion from the non-ASBS portion directly the permittee to go back and revise the E-Link according to instructions that you guys provide. And so obviously staff would oversee that.
So that would be something we would decide to accept.
I would recommend that. I think at this point, in order to focus the issues.
Alright, so today we're just isolated on the issue of doing our
recommendation. Is that the recommendation?
Just a broader issue. We delegated the authority to Sam to make this decision. Right, and so in my mind, I'm going to think about what's our standard of review here, and what is our real role in reviewing a decision that was made pursuant to our authority. We delegated because these plans are incredibly technical, and we set the policy aside for them. Staff's job, and area co-aspects of that. So I guess I do it a little bit differently. I don't know that I'm not thinking about it so much as a decision on the merits, if you will, because I don't think anyone here has the technical expertise to second guess staff on these things. So it's a little bit of a weird place that we're in, and without any standard review. We just kind of fumble our way through it, I guess. But my perspective is that our role is not so much to review something on the merits, but just to take a look at the issues and decide whether any obvious mistakes are made.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you don't need to dig into the sort of dirty detail at this
right.
point.
And I guess, I'm comforted by the fact that there is a process already in place. That petitioners have commenced, which was the process that was laid out in the score, which is the appeal to the state board, which is a more formal part of the appeal process.
It's the more formal, there's a written standard of review.
Yeah.
We are a little fumbling here. We're just trying to stop the
process. If a court were to review whatever it is we're doing today, I don't know. I put myself in the shoes, but I wouldn't know what standard would apply. So I do this, were there any obvious mistakes?
I think, if you were to give a standard review, I said this last time, I didn't go into it this time, but really it's whether you think the executive officer's action was inappropriate in light of the contentions raised in the petition, but also recognizing what type of information was before the executive officer at the time he made the decision. Obviously, we're always going to get more information from your
honor. Inappropriate standard.
Yes.
I thought, obviously, the same.
Yeah, I mean, that would be pretty much the standard for you.
I don't want to
value
our decisions reflect on the executive officer. It's an issue.
Okay, why don't we proceed?
This is Francis over here. I just want to add that, the board has delegated the authority to the executive officer to take many actions, and those actions, when the executive officer acts, are considered by law to be actions of the board and then petitionable to the state water board. But the regional board, in most circumstances, not all, could reconsider an executive officer's actions on any of the things that are delegated, most of them, not all. And so I would call this more of a nature of reconsideration of what the executive officer did, and not, and then you're just acting as the board reconsidering it. So it's sort of in the sense of a de novo, if you choose to review it, you would just choose to review it on however you review and make decisions on any action. So it's more of just a reconsideration. It's not really a petition or an appeal. It's like reconsidering what your executive officer did under your delegated authority. And just like you took an action, you decided you want to reconsider your own action, you could do that. And you're essentially reconsidering an action of the board, executive officer, on board become. So does that help? That helps at all?
I think I'm just able to
one there.
Thank you. Okay, well, on that note, thank you so much. That is the 3 minutes remaining from our staff to give a presentation.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Sounds like I can, but it's loud when I'm here. My name is Renee Purdy, as you all know, and I'm going to be now giving you some background before we turn it over to the petitioners for their presentation. And so the brief presentation that I'm providing now and the one that I'm going to provide after the petitioner's presentation basically mirrors board staff's August 29, 2016 memorandum that responded to the petitioner's contentions. We generally organized it the same way, so that might be helpful. If you see numbering at the top of the slides, the numbering refers to the same numbering in the memorandum that we gave you. And before I go on, I do want to acknowledge the work of Deborah Brandis and Beth Payne and also Ivar Ridgway. They're in the back of the room, and they've been tremendously helpful in preparing the written memorandum as well as the presentation for you today. The North Santa Monica Bay Avon area is the westernmost coastal area in Los Angeles County. It encompasses 86 square miles, including 20 sub-watersheds and 28 freshwater coastal streams. All of these receiving water bodies in the Avon area are ultimately tributary, as you all probably know, to Santa Monica Bay, and thus the regulations from the California Ocean Plan, in addition to those in our Regional Basin Plan, are applicable. And I did want to note, I really enjoyed that we're starting at 12:30 because I had a nice drive right along the North Santa Monica Bay Avon area this morning and up through one of the watersheds that drain to that area, and actually stopped at the beach at that point as well. So it really put me in the mood for the agenda item today. So this figure shows the overall North Santa Monica Bay Avon area, as well as the portion that drains to the Laguna Point to Lago Point ASBS, also referred to as ASBS 24, as Jennifer mentioned, that's shown in the blue hatched area. Half of the Ewing area drains to this ASBS. ASBSs are designated by the State Water Board and protected through the Ocean Plan. ASBS 24 was actually designated in 1974. It stretches 24 miles, spanning the westernmost part of Los Angeles County and the southeastern part of Ventura County. It's actually the largest ASBS along the mainland of Southern California. Approximately 12.8 miles border the North Santa Monica Bay Avon area in Los Angeles County. You can see that the southeastern boundary of the ASDS is at the Idaho line, which is about 3 miles west of the Malibu Pier. So in 1972, the State Water Board adopted the California Ocean Plan. It's been revised numerous times, with the latest revision in 2015. The Ocean Plan establishes water quality objectives for California's ocean waters, and it provides the basis for regulation of waste discharged into California's coastal waters. It's applicable to both point sources, such as atmosphere discharges, as well as non-point source discharges. Importantly, the Ocean Plan prohibits the discharge of waste to designated ASDSs unless an exception is granted by the State Water Board. The Ocean Plan authorizes the State Water Board to grant an exception to the Ocean Plan provisions, including the prohibition of discharges to ASDSs, where the exception will not compromise the protection of beneficial uses of ocean waters and the public interest will be served. In 2004, the State Water Board notified a number of entities that they must cease discharge of stormwater and non-point source discharges into ASDSs or request an exception to the Ocean Plan's discharge prohibition. The State Water Board received 27 applications for an exception to the Ocean Plan prohibition, including from the City of Malibu, the County of Los Angeles, and the Los Angeles County Flood Control District, which I'll refer to from here on collectively as permittees. And this request was for an exception for MS4 stormwater discharges to ASDS 24. In March 2012, through Resolution Number 2012-12, the State Water Board adopted a general exception to the Ocean Plan prohibition against waste discharges to ASDSs for these discharges of stormwater and non-point source waste by the 27 applicants. And this was with the criteria or provision that these discharges are covered under an appropriate authorization to discharge waste to the ASDS, and such authorizations include the LA County MS4 permit. And second, that the authorization or permit incorporates all of the ASDS special protections that are contained in Attachment B to the Ocean Plan, which are applicable to that discharge. So MS4 discharges from the City of Malibu, the County of Malibu, and the Los Angeles County Flood Control District meet these two criteria. The discharges are covered under the LA County MS4 permit, and the LA County MS4 permit incorporates all ASDS requirements from the Ocean Plan. The ASDS special protections require MS4 permittees to specifically address the prohibition of non-stormwater discharges and the requirement that MS4 stormwater discharges may not alter natural ocean water quality. And they need to address these in what is referred to an ASDS compliance plan. The ASDS compliance plan is subject to approval by the executive director of the State Water Board or executive officer of the Regional Water Board. The ASDS compliance plan is to be included in the permittee's stormwater management plan, or SWIP. In the case of the LA County MS4 permit, for permittees that opt to develop either a watershed management program or an enhanced watershed management program, the permittee's SWIP is their watershed management program or enhanced watershed management program. In September of 2014, the City of Malibu, the County of Los Angeles, and the Flood Control District submitted a draft ASDS compliance plan to the State Water Board. Then in March 2015, the State Water Board provided comments on the draft ASDS compliance plan and required the permittees to make some revisions and resubmit the plan by September of 2015. In September 2015, permittees submitted a revised ASDS compliance plan to State Water Board, and it's currently under review by the State Water Board. I also did want to note that since submission of the revised compliance plan in September 2015, additional sampling has been conducted by permittees pursuant to some of these ASDS requirements and will be submitted to the State and Regional Board in the near future. Finally, I want to briefly cover the data evaluation requirements and the ASBS special protections. These require dischargers to collect ocean water samples at a site within the ASBS, paired with stormwater samples from a nearby M4 outfall, in order to evaluate compliance with the ocean plan's narrative objective regarding the alteration of natural ocean water quality. And I know the diagram on the right of the slide is not really very legible, but it is included in your board package. It's page 6-68. Not on your printout either, but if you look in your board package on 6-68, you should be able to see a better version of that. It's a full-page version. The assessment has three steps. The first is an evaluation of what is we call post-storm ocean water quality within the ASBS relative to natural ocean water quality. And natural ocean water quality was predetermined through sampling of various reference sites through the BITE Regional Monitoring Program. And then where post-storm water quality is worse than pre-storm or the natural ocean water quality, then there's a comparison of post-storm and pre-storm ocean water quality within the ASBS. And then finally, if that post-storm water quality within the ASBS is altered from the pre-storm conditions, then the permittees look to their M4 discharge to see if the quality of the discharge might have caused or contributed to that alteration of natural water quality. Again, it's on page 6-68 if you are able to find that in your board package. It's a somewhat complicated process, so the flow chart helps somewhat in understanding that. So in summary, there are four sets of data that are used in this data evaluation. There's reference ocean water quality that's considered, then there's pre-storm and post-storm water quality, and then MS4, stormwater discharge data quality. So I will probably, I'll be touching on this again in my response, but that concludes my overview of the North Santa Monica Bay EMIM relative to the ASBS 24 and the Ocean Plan and ASBS special protections and requirements. So I'm now going to invite the petitioners to the podium to present their contentions. And then following their presentation, I'll return to provide board response.
Thank you. My name is Arthur Huxley. I'm here today with Becky Hyatt. I'm with LA Waterkeeper, and Becky's with NRDC. Before we begin on the substance of our petition, I'd just like to put on the record, we have received the sheriff's denial of our request to appoint separate counsel for the board and for staff, and we continue to lodge our objections to that. Because counsel is being asked to advise board members neutrally while also advising staff whose approval is the subject of the proceedings. And this is especially true in these proceedings today because they're functioning as a proceeding sort of on the merits of the petition to determine whether there will be further proceedings on the merits of the petition. So we think that some sort of advocacy role is almost inherent in such a structure, and we wish to just lodge those objections. I will now turn it over to Becky.
This is Francis over here. Let me just tell the board what I did or what the chair did to something. So the board chair issued a ruling that I've given you copies of that denied the request and lays out the concerns he raised and then the basis for the denial of the request. So you have that, and I think that's the end of it. I don't think we have to discuss it anymore, but I just want to let you know that you have that.
Good afternoon, Chair Munoz and members of the board. Becky Hyatt with Natural Resources Defense Council.
As Mr. Matter, we would just like to thank the board staff for all of their hard work in helping and working with the community to develop their unit. The staff's contributions have not gone unnoticed, as evidenced by the fact that most of the E1s that were approved were fairly robust from our perspective, and that only one of the approvals was challenged. NRDC and LA Water Keeper work daily to protect and enhance the waters that our members swim, fish, surf, and boat in so that they are clean, healthy, and safe. And because polluted runoff threatens these water bodies, our organizations work closely with the board staff to ensure effective control of stormwater pollution and compliance with the requirements of the LA County Municipal Stormwater Permit. We appreciate the opportunity today to provide a presentation of our petition for review of the executive office's approval of the North Santa Monica Bay EWIP. And as Arthur will discuss in more detail, the executive officer approved the EWIP that does not protect ASBS 24 and fails to comply with the terms of the MS4 permit. Review by this board is needed to correct these serious flaws. The North Santa Monica Bay EWIP, as you've heard by now, includes an area of special biological significance within the received waters. The California Ocean Plan protects such areas with heightened standards in order to preserve the special habitat, species, and biological communities that exist in these ocean areas. According to the State Water Resource Control Board, areas of special biological significance are the basic building blocks for a sustainable, resilient coastal environment and economy. In other words, they're the ecosystem gems of the coast, and they are a critical part of any MS4 permit to the extent municipal stormwater is discharged to the ASBS. Given the accelerating pressures on California's coastline, pollution control officials must provide continual and adequate protections for areas of special biological significance, and dischargers must be held accountable for posing harmful impacts on these special coastal areas. To give a sense of the quality of resources involved, here is a view of ASBS 24. As Renee mentioned, ASBS 24 spans 24 miles of California coast and is home to many unique and precious marine species. And to just get a sense of the threat facing ASBS 24, here's a slide of an outfall showing the discharges of polluted runoff into the waters of Zuma Beach. In 2012, the North Santa Monica Bay EWIP permittees received a narrow exception from the requirements applicable to discharges to areas of special biological significance. However, the North Santa Monica Bay EWIP fails to apply the standards of the ASBS exception. The EWIP also fails to consider relevant readily available data for discharges to ASBS as required by the MS4 permit. This board must correct this flaw because the discharges permit provides them with a safe harbor. The permit deems the permittee to be in compliance while implementing an approved EWIP. Thus, the permit approval process represents a last opportunity to protect these special biological locations, or else risk worsening them while the discharges face zero repercussions or penalties. These are all the reasons why it is especially concerning to us that the executive officer approved the North Santa Monica Bay EWIP. Even if the program is fully implemented, it will not adequately protect ASBS 24 because the approved program fails to apply the exception standards and fails to consider all relevant data as required by the permit. Given the significance of the North Santa Monica Bay EWIP and its implications for important aquatic resources, we strongly urge the board to review our petition on the merits. And now I will turn it over to Arthur, who will explain the shortcomings in more detail.
And some of this was actually done in the staff presentation, so I'll skip through it in the interest of time. As
You know, the ASBS prohibits all discharges to ASBS waters except subject to narrow exceptions contained in the ASBS exception. The EWIP fails to prohibit non-stormwater discharges to ASBS number 24. And it also fails to apply the exception standards prohibiting any stormwater discharges altering natural ocean water quality. The rest of these slides are just sources for that contention. So, again, in the interest of time, I'll continue through. The EWIP does not consider all available relevant stormwater, N1 stormwater data as required by the NS work permit. Here is a list of various types of that data. And as you see, several of the data, including 2013 and 14 stormwater samples of 21 outfalls to the ASBS, are actually attached as an appendix to the EWIP itself. Despite this, the EWIP denies the existence of any relevant discharge data. It says, quote, on page 43, no MS4 discharge monitoring data were available at the time of EWIP preparation. Now, in responses to comments issued after the staff approval, the responses to comments asserted that the available data were reviewed and were incorporated by reference into the EWIP. However, this assertion contradicts the plain language of the EWIP itself that says no discharge data were reviewed or considered. Furthermore, even if they were incorporated by reference, data incorporation by reference fails to meet the MS4 permit requirements for a reasonable assurance analysis because the incorporation by reference is not an input into the RAA. It must be actively inputted to properly calibrate the models. At this point, what I'd like to do is just run through the regional board and staff responses to our petition. As you can see, the claims that the response made are basically just the negative of ours. So they did apply the correct standards and consider all relevant data. However, the EWIP itself says that no discharge data was considered. Now, the staff response interprets the EWIP's statement that no data was considered as meaning that the data were rejected as limited or irrelevant. But nothing in the EWIP itself indicates that the ASBS data was evaluated in any manner. There's no explicit or even implicit rejection as limited or irrelevant. I don't think the point has been answered yet, that attaching a plan that includes data as an exhibit to the EWIP is not equivalent to consideration of that data in the EWIP, in particular in the reasonable assurance analysis. Now, there were several non-stormwater discharges to the ASBS, many repeat discharges, that were observed and documented in the ASBS compliance plan. The staff response to the petition includes an admission that none of these visual observation data was considered in the EWIP, and that the EWIP proposes to repeat the visual observation process rather than building on the data that's already available. So the resources expended under the ASBS program are effectively wasted, and compliance is being delayed because of this failure to consider relevant data. Now, the ASBS exception requires a compliance plan for EMPs that does one of two things. It reduces pollutants by 90% or meets the ocean plan instantaneous maximum limits for the pollutants in question. However, the EWIP only applies bacterial and nutrient limits in its modeling exercise and the BMP plan. So basically, what this means is the ASBS standards were never applied. Attaching the ASBS compliance plan that references ocean plan standards was done and that was attached as an exhibit to the UN. But that's not equivalent to modeling, in particular, in the RAA, using those standards. Staff is also arguing that ocean plan limits are irrelevant unless correlated or paired to receiving water sample. However, neither the ASBS exception language nor the attached flowchart require or even mention correlation with repeat paired receiving water sampling. The exception requires a compliance plan that meets ocean plan standards or reduces pollutant loads by 90% without conditions or correlations or pairing. The staff interpretation would allow continued discharges violating the ocean plan standards into the ASBS. And finally, the ASBS prohibition on non-stormwater discharges is not properly applied in the EWIM. The exception has flatly prohibited non-stormwater water discharges since 2012. But the EWIM, and specifically the RAA, apply TMDL standards to determine dry weather compliance. Those TMDL standards include allowances for exceedance days. Hence, the EWIM modeling does not apply the ASBS prohibition and does not propose the BMP to comply with that standard. Its modeling allows dry weather exceedances based on the TMDL standards, but not the stricter ASBS standards. So for these reasons, we believe that the EWIM failed to apply the ASBS exception requirements and thereby violates the ocean plan, and its failure to consider readily available relevant data also violates the MS4 permit, and therefore the regional board should review the merits of the petition. Thank you.
So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to respond to the petitioner's contentions. We prepared this presentation based on the petitioner's written petition that they submitted to us. However, to the extent that I just heard things from the presentation now, I'll try to weave those in as best I can. But I don't think that we've already covered them in the presentation, or I'm, of course, going to be able to answer any questions that you have afterwards. Let me go back to my presentation, Jerry, to slide, let's see, well, wherever I left off. Right after the, oh, there, go down right there. Yeah, that would be great. So before I provide those staff's response to the contentions you just heard, I did think it would be helpful to just take two slides to briefly go over the development, review, public participation, and approval process that was undertaken for the North San Marco Bay EWIM. The City of Malibu, LA County, and Flood Control District, as you know, collaborated on the development of this EWIM for the North San Marco Bay sub-watersheds. And as required by the permit, the three permittees first submitted a notification of intent to develop an EWIM to the regional board in June 2013. The regional board reviewed and approved the permittees' notification of intent, as well as the proposed early action projects that they were required to complete. And actually, two of these early action projects addressed discharges to ASBS 24, which I think was notable. Following this, the three permittees submitted an EWIM work plan as well as their coordinated in-grade monitoring program in June 2014, and then submitted their complete draft EWIM in June 2015. The North San Monica Bay EWIM was extensively reviewed using the same process that was used for the other 11 EWIMs. Board staff provided written comments on the draft North San Monica Bay EWIM in October of 2015, and those comments detailed the revisions that needed to be addressed prior to approval of the EMUM. And then the implementee submitted the revised EMUM to the board in January of this year. Both before and after submittal of the revised draft EMUM, board staff participated in meetings, phone calls, and email exchanges with the permittees. After reviewing the revised draft, North San Juan gave the EMUM in relation to the board's written comments. Board staff concluded that the EMUM satisfied the requirements of the LA County MS4 permit, and then on April 19, 2016, the executive officer approved the North San Juan Bay EMUM. A number of opportunities for stakeholder input on the EMUM were provided. The petitioners in Gila Bay participated in TAC meetings between July 2013 and August 2014. Additionally, between May 2014 and May 2015, the permittees held three local public workshops just focused on the development of the North Santa Monica Bay EMUM. The regional board then provided a two-month-long public review and written comment period on the draft EMUMs, and then held three public workshops on the draft and revised EMUMs, including the North San Juan Bay EMUM. Additionally, stakeholders were provided opportunities to meet with regional board staff to discuss the draft and revised EMUMs, and board staff met with petitioners in Gila Bay in February and March 2016 regarding the revised EMUMs. So you've heard from the petitioners regarding their concerns, and to organize staff response, we grouped petitioners' contentions into two specific areas of concern. The first concern is whether the North Santa Monica Bay EMUM applies the proper ASBS standards, both for stormwater discharges as well as for non-stormwater discharges from the MS4 to the ASBS. The second area concerns whether the North Santa Monica Bay EMUM considers and utilizes available and relevant stormwater and non-stormwater data for discharges to ASBS 24 that have been generated by the permittees. So the first area relates to standards, those sets of concerns, and the second set of concerns relate to the utilization of available data. To aid the regional board in understanding the rationale behind the executive officer's approval of the North Santa Monica Bay EMUM on behalf of the board, I'll provide responses to the specific contentions in each of these areas. So first, starting with the application of the ASBS standards. Regarding the petitioner's concern about the application of the ASBS stormwater standards, the EMUM utilizes appropriate standards from the Ocean Plan for stormwater discharges. The EMUM was developed to implement the requirements of the LA County MS4 permit, and the LA County MS4 permit's receiving water limitations include the numeric objectives from Table 1 of the Ocean Plan, as well as the narrative objective that natural ocean water quality cannot be altered by MS4 discharges to an ASBS. These ASBS stormwater standards are specifically identified and addressed in Attachment E of the North San Juan Bay EMUM. And as you've heard, Attachment E is the permittee's ASBS compliance plan, which they've incorporated as part of their overall enhanced watershed management program. This part of their EMUM includes a number of data tables that provide a comparison of recent monitoring data to these ASBS stormwater standards. The EMUM also implements the ASBS prohibition on trash discharges. You haven't heard much of that from the permittees, but it is another stormwater standard that is in the Ocean Plan and applies to discharges to the ASBS. And it does this by implementing the requirements of the LA County MS4 permit to implement the Santa Monica Bay Debris TMDL, which you adopted several years ago. For non-stormwater discharges, the ASBS standard is, as you've heard, a prohibition on non-stormwater discharges to the ASBS with some limited exceptions. The EMUM implements the prohibition on non-stormwater discharges to ASBS 24 consistent with the Ocean Plan General Exemption Requirement. In particular, I wanted to point out two places in the EMUM where this is addressed. One is in section 4.1.1, which addresses non-stormwater discharge screening, and this addresses the requirement to eliminate, in the words of the AE1, 100% of non-stormwater discharges. And then in section 5.3.2, which deals with the reasonable assurance analysis for dry water, the AE1 commits to compliance with the permit's requirement to eliminate 100% of non-exempt non-stormwater discharges. This commitment is consistent with the non-stormwater discharge prohibition that's in attachment B of the Ocean Plan General Exception. To comply with the Ocean Plan and the LA County MS4 permit, to prohibit the non-stormwater discharges to ASBS 24, the AE1 basically proposes a program that consists of non-stormwater outfall-based screening, source identification, monitoring, and then abatement or elimination of any non-stormwater discharges. And the steps are identified in Table 11 and shown in Figure 6 of the Enhanced Watershed Management Program. And then they're also described in more detail in the Permittee's Coordinated Integrated Monitoring Program that applies to this AE1 barrier. Next, with regard to the RIA related to ASBS non-stormwater standards, the petitioners seem to misunderstand the purpose of the dry water RIA that is presented in the AE1. The model that's used in the AE1's dry water RIA does not establish compliance with the non-stormwater discharge prohibition. The purpose of that semi-quantitative conceptual model, or what they refer to as a four-part test, which was the basis for the dry weather RAA, is to provide evidence regarding the impact of MS4 non-stormwater discharges on the receiving water. And then the findings of that RAA are used to determine the extent to which BMPs are then needed to address non-stormwater discharges. However, as I just mentioned, in the case of the non-stormwater discharges, the North San Monica Bay AE1 already addresses the requirement to eliminate 100% of these non-stormwater discharges, establishing this program that I just mentioned of screening, monitoring, and then abatement or elimination. And then compliance with the requirement to eliminate 100% of non-stormwater discharges will be based on data from the permittee's non-stormwater outfall screening and monitoring program. More specifically, the petitioners incorrectly state that the dry weather RA allows additional exceedances, and particularly they're concerned about the San Monica Bay beaches bacteria TMDL, and they think that it's allowing these additional exceedances to be deemed acceptable. And I just want to make sure it's clear that this is not the case. First, the AE1 acknowledges that the dry weather compliance deadlines for the San Monica Bay beaches bacteria TMDL have passed, and states that the analysis is not intended to support or justify any new compliance schedules for the TMDL requirements. Second, three of the criteria in this four-part test require documentation of either non-existence of MS4 outfalls or the elimination of any non-stormwater discharges from MS4 outfalls. And then the third criterion requires demonstration of no exceedances of the bacteria requirements per the bacteria TMDL provisions. And I also want to point out, and I think I'll touch on this again a little bit later on, that bacteriological water quality conditions are appropriately used in this case as a criterion in the dry weather RAA because bacteria is considered a controlling pollutant for MS4 discharges in this AE1 area. And by controlling pollutant, what I mean is it is the most difficult pollutant to address and is going to require the greatest controls to address. Furthermore, there's also an extensive shoreline monitoring data set. As you all know, for bacteria, bacteria monitoring is done very frequently and has been done for many, many years along this part of the coast. So to conclude with regard to the non-stormwater standards, the North San Monica Bay AE1 and its companion monitoring program include detailed non-stormwater screening processes, which play an important role in complying with the ASBS prohibition on non-stormwater discharges. And I wanted to also point out that I heard that there was concern that the work that was done through the ASBS compliance plan to screen for non-stormwater discharges was wasted effort. The one thing that I want to point out about non-stormwater discharges is it really takes a lot of vigilance. You may screen 1 month and go and take some actions to eliminate those discharges, but non-stormwater discharges are highly variable, and it takes rescreening and continual monitoring of these discharges. So the work that was done through the ASBS compliance plan resulted in eliminating some of those non-stormwater discharges, but it's necessary to continue to be vigilant about screening for these should new non-stormwater discharges begin. The next thing that I want to do is talk about the concerns regarding the consideration and utilization of available and relevant ASBS data, both data under stormwater or wet weather conditions, and also non-stormwater data. So first of all, for the contention that the EWM fails to consider relevant available stormwater data, as you heard, petitioners largely rely on a single sentence in the North Santa Monica EWM that no MS4 discharge monitoring data were available at the time of this assessment. And on the basis of this sentence, the petitioners state that the express language of the North Santa Monica Bay EWM contradicts Regional Water Board staff statement in response to comments that appropriate data were reviewed and considered. And as you read in our memorandum, based on staff's review of the North Santa Monica Bay EWM in its entirety, staff found that the relevant available ASBS stormwater data are included and evaluated in Appendix E of the North Santa Monica Bay EWM. And again, Appendix E is the revised ASBS compliance plan that the permittees prepared pursuant to the ASBS requirements. I do want to note here that it's not just included by reference, it is a part of the North Santa Monica Bay EWM. To give you an example, the house is, if you think of our LA County MS4 permit, we have many, many attachments. They are part of the permit requirements, and in the same manner, attachment E is part of the overall North Santa Monica Bay EWM program that must be implemented by the permittees. And I think you probably recall that I mentioned that ASBS compliance plan, actually the OCEAN plan, even contemplates that becoming a part of a permittee's SWIP or stormwater management plan. And in this case, the EWM serves as the permittee's stormwater management plan. Second, with regard to the sentence doesn't indicate that no stormwater or receiving water data for ASBS 24 were considered in the EWM assessment. The section that they're referring to only addresses MS4 outfall monitoring data, not receiving water data. Receiving water data are actually presented in a separate subsequent section, actually it's a previous section of the EWM section 2.1.2. And it's also notable that this section is not specific to ASBS 24 MS4 discharge data, but is rather addressing the availability of MS4 outfall data for the EWM area as a whole. And as you heard, the petitioners reiterate our interpretation of that statement is a recognition that there are limited MS4 outfall data for the EWM area as a whole. And in part, that's because under the old permit, as you all probably recall, there was not outfall monitoring data required. Basically, what we had was 7 mass emission stations and then some rotating tributary monitoring. So we anticipate with the new permit and the requirements for outfall monitoring data, we are going to be having a lot more outfall data that can be considered during the adaptive management process for the EWMs, including this one. The next thing I want to touch on is you did your concerns about the utilization or lack of utilization of the data in the RAA. Specifically, I'm speaking about the RAA that was conducted for the stormwater conditions in this case. And the petitioners took issue in their written petition with the use of generalized land use data to conduct the RAA and suggested that the RAA should have used the ASBS data instead. And I want to just discuss the two reasons that the ASBS stormwater data were not used in the reasonable assurance analysis. The first is that the ASBS stormwater data that have been collected to date are not sufficient to modify the inputs of the model used in the RAA. And the RAA used a model known as SBPAT. It was developed by a number of agencies and is one of the models that was identified in the permit as an acceptable model for doing a reasonable assurance analysis. The use of the generalized land use pollutant loading data is consistent with the RAA requirement of the LA County MS4 permit, as well as staff's RAA guidance that we put out for permittees. And we discussed the use of this generalized land use data in several of the TAC meetings that we have before submission of the watershed management programs and enhanced watershed management programs. The ASBS stormwater data could potentially be used in the future, however, with additional sampling data to further calibrate and validate the permittees' reasonable assurance analysis. Second, with regard to use of the data, it wasn't necessary to include the data in the model, and I want to just take a minute to explain what I mean by that. The LA County MS4 permit specifies the water body pollutant combinations that need to be addressed in an RAA. And you may recall these include basically pollutants that are being addressed by a TMDL. It also includes any pollutants that are identified on the 303D list of impaired water bodies. And then finally, any pollutants that exceed applicable receiving water limitations and for which MS4 discharges may be causing or contributing to the exceedings in the receiving water. The category that the petitioners are focusing on is this Category 3. And the permittees did not identify any Category 3 pollutants to include in the RAA based on the ASBS data analysis that's in Appendix E of the North Santa Monica E1. This is because the 2013 and 14 ASBS stormwater data were not found to correlate with the paired ocean receiving water data. And what I mean by that is basically that the MS4 discharges were not found to be causing or contributing to receiving water limit exceedances in ASBS 24 for any of the pollutants other than those that had already been identified by the permittees in Categories 1 and 2. And the ocean plan does lay out a process by which it's only considered an exceedance of receiving water limitations if there is that pairing. I think there's a difference clearly between the petitioners and staff with regard to how the ocean plan requirements are being evaluated. But we have discussed this with state with staff who are the ones who have written the ocean plan. And there is this requirement that I tried to describe in the background section that you first look at ocean water quality, and then if ocean water quality is altered, at that point you do look at the alcohol data to determine whether the quality of the discharge could have been the cause of that alteration of natural water quality. And it's only if the answer to that question is yes, only then does the ocean plan consider that to be a pollutant that needs to be addressed by the MS4 dischargers. Which I think I just basically covered what I was going to cover on this slide. So if you have questions, I'm happy to go into more detail about that at the end, but I'm going to just skip on to my next slide here. So moving on to consideration of the petitioner's concerns that ASBS non-stormwater data were not considered, many of the petitioner's concerns in this area focus on the draft ASBS compliance plan and don't consider the additional inspections of outfalls for non-stormwater discharges that was presented in the North Santa Monica Bay E1, in the main body of the E1. And this is because, as I mentioned, there's not only is there the ASBS requirement for the elimination of the non-stormwater discharges and for some monitoring, but there's also a corresponding set of requirements consistent with that in the LA County MS4 permit, and Firmities have been conducting this non-stormwater outfall-based screening for the last couple of years under the requirements of the LA County Amherst Board permit. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about is that the petitioners mischaracterized the extent and the outcome of the outfall inspections that were conducted in 2012 and 2013. According to the September 2015 revised ASBS compliance plan, the permittees inspected 31 outfalls in the ASBS area, not 13 as was indicated in the petition. And this was done over a two-year period covering a total of 8 months. During this period, the permittees observed non-stormwater discharges on 73 of 251 occasions. Of these outfall inspections, unauthorized or undetermined non-stormwater discharges were identified in approximately 10% of these inspections, meaning the rest of them were authorized or conditionally exempt types of discharges that were occurring, and those are allowed under the OSHA plan and under the LA County Amherst Board permit. By the 2013 inspection, these discharges had either ceased or had been significantly reduced through outreach and enforcement efforts on the part of the permittees. The petitioners did express concern about some of the non-stormwater discharges identified as hillside dewatering and natural stream flows in the ASBS compliance plan, and they did suggest that additional data are required to support the characterizations. They further suggested that permittees needed to indicate whether the discharges are permitted or unpermitted, but as I said, those types of discharges are allowed both under the OSHA plan as well as under the LA County Amherst Board permit. So the petitioners also expressed concern that the draft ASBS compliance plan distinguishes without basis between discharges that land on the beach in the ASBS 24 and those that flow to the surf line, and state that the ASBS compliance plan does not adequately address the numerous dry weather flows that the plan reports as not reaching the surf zone. For unauthorized and undetermined non-stormwater discharges, I want to just point out again that the ASBS compliance plan outlines a suite of measures that include outreach inspections and enforcement, not just outreach. And regardless, in their e-book, as I mentioned earlier, the permittees commit to ensuring that discharges of non-authorized non-stormwater discharges do not occur, whether they reach the SERP zone or not. Next, the petitioners incorrectly state that the REA 4 dry weather discharges considered to no data. 5 years of shoreline bacteria monitoring data were considered in the evaluation that's presented in Table 31 of the EWIM. And as noted earlier, this is appropriate as there's an extensive shoreline bacteria monitoring data set. And like I said, bacteria is considered the controlling pollutant for these MS4 discharges. For these reasons, bacteriological water quality data are appropriately used in the dry weather REA. Additionally, the EWIM actually contains more up-to-date non-stormwater outfall screening data than the ASBS compliance plan. These data are from 2014-2015, while the ASBS compliance plan non-stormwater discharge inspection data are from 2012-2013. And as I mentioned, that's important because of the high variability in non-stormwater discharges. So it is critical to continue to conduct screening of these outfalls for these types of discharges. So that's what I've just been talking about here. And the one other thing that I do want to touch on, though, with regard to the schedule, because you heard some concerns that there could be some delay in implementation as a result of this ongoing screening for non-stormwater discharges. The screening is happening simultaneously with implementation of measures to eliminate these non-stormwater discharges. And also, the screening will actually be completed much earlier, I think, than the petitioners anticipate. Right now, the source identification, so not just the screening, but then the next step in that process, which is identifying the sources of those non-stormwater discharges, will be complete for 50% of the outfalls with significant discharges, by December 28th of this year, and then for 100%, the source identification will be complete by December 28th of 2017. So again, there's concerns that have been expressed about a delay in implementation, the screening and the implementation are going on simultaneously, and that is made clear both in the ASCS compliance plan as well as in the EWIM, the main body of the EWIM with regard to measures that are being taken to eliminate non-stormwater discharges. The last thing that I want to do is touch on the status of the ASBS compliance plan. So that completes my response to the contentions, but I do want to just update the board on where the ASBS compliance plan stands at this point. As I mentioned, in September of 2015, the permittee submitted a revised ASBS compliance plan to the State Water Board in response to the State Water Board's comments on the draft plan, and it's that revised version that's included as part of the North Santa Monica Bay EWIM. The revised ASBS compliance plan is currently under review by the State Water Board staff, and we're collaborating with the State Board staff on that review of the revised compliance plan. I did also mention at the beginning, and I'll just reiterate, in terms of revisions to the draft plan, one of the things that State Board did request or require that the permittees do is additional sampling within the ASBS area. And there has been, I think, some difficulty, and you might hear from the permittees about this in terms of doing all of those monitoring events during wet weather conditions, but it sounds as though that was completed this past winter, and we will be getting those data in the near future. Because of the timing of the EWIM approval process that was laid out in the LA County MS4 permit, it wasn't possible for us to align the review and approval process of the ASBS compliance plan with exactly that of the North Santa Monica Bay EWIM. There's also not a requirement for us to do that in the ocean plan. However, as I said, the State Board and the Regional Board are going to be working to collaboratively review the revised ASBS compliance plan, and if there are any inconsistencies between the final ASBS compliance plan and the EWIM, then the LA County MS4 permit lays out a process for adaptive management, and any changes to the EWIM can then be addressed through that adaptive management process for the EWIM. So that concludes my presentation on board staff's responses to contention, and now I'm going to turn it over to Sam, actually, for a brief conclusion before we invite up the permittees.
Thank you, Renee. I would just like to state that the approval of North Santa Monica Bay EWIM relied heavily on staff's work and also petitioner comments. In conclusion, I found that the North Santa Monica Bay EWIM applied the proper standards and requirements for the ocean plan, including the prohibition on non-stormwater discharges. In addition, it also included TMDL standards as appropriate. I found that it also appropriately considered and utilized the ASBS stormwater and non-stormwater data, despite the assertion that no data were considered. Clearly, they were. When we did the analysis and the staff looked at the analysis, it was very clear that all the data were considered. And it also demonstrated a reasonable assurance that the implementation of the EWIM would meet all applicable standards. I think there was a comment earlier that we're only taking the approach of looking at the controlling pollutants. That's an approach we've taken the entire time we've worked with the watershed management programs as well as the enhanced watershed management programs. And I venture to say that we did not limit the analysis to controlling pollutants, which has been found to be technically sound. I think many of the plans would still be doing their modeling today at great expense with no additional technical value. And so, in approving the North Santa Monica Bay EWIM on behalf of the Regional Board, I determined that the EWIM meets the requirements of the LA County MS4 permit, the Ocean Plan's ASBS special protection provisions for discharges of stormwater. We had comments that were laid out in a letter from me in October 2015. Responses and to all of those comments were provided. many of which we talked about details today, and the basis of those responses, the revisions that were made to the EWIN, and especially the adaptive management process that they just mentioned, we felt very concerned that possibly the State Board might approve a compliance plan that was different from our EWIN. And as Renee has told you, there is a method and process within the permit by which you can complete those two plans. So based on standards and limits, appropriate data analysis, and reasonable assurance analysis, I approve the EWIN's command committee enhanced production management program on your behalf.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Williams, and members of the board. My name is Angela George. I am Assistant Deputy Director of Los Angeles County Flood Control, Los Angeles County Department of Public Works. Excuse me. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. We won't be 10 minutes. Instead, I want to just tell you that I am here representing the Los Angeles County Flood Control District and the County of Los Angeles. And we want to commend the regional board and the staff for a very thorough review of the North San Juan Bay Coastal Watershed Easement and its subsequent approval by Mr. Umber, your executive officer. The approval for the reasons set forth in our written comments, as well as everything that you've heard today from Ms. Purdy, as well as Mr. Unger, really the basis that we want to state that those are our real comments. We won't stand here today and reiterate the comprehensive report that Ms. Purdy provided. Instead, we're going to say we worked real hard on that. We feel that that it speaks for itself. We provide written comments to your board, and we are working diligently with the City of Malibu to implement the EWIN, and we remain committed to continue doing so. So I'm not going to take any more of your time by reiterating things. If you have questions, obviously you can answer those, but I just want to say we remain committed to implementing the EWIN, and we're really appreciative for the comprehensive reviews done by your staff. And thank you.
Thank you. We have two gentlemen from the City of Malibu, Mr. George and Mr. Sheldon.
Chairman Lewis and the board, Craig George from the City of Malibu, and I have the meet up Brandon Sheldon, also from the City of Malibu. Briefly, I just have a couple comments, and Dr. Sheldon will make some other comments, but mostly, I just want to thank the board for everything. We affirm the city's commitment to water quality and the city's commitment really to water. We have a number of programs that we spend about tens of millions of dollars in water conservation, water reuse, and here today in water quality. And we really think we've done an incredible job, and we support everything that your staff has done in helping us with that. So before today about the EWIN, I think we've devoted a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort. And I think that we have developed over many years of work and collaboration with the board a great program, and I applaud the staff for doing that. I heard a couple of things. There's one comment real quick on Chair Munoz about the MSOR reaching out to some of the permittees. I think this was a collaborative and cooperative effort, and I really appreciate the board and the County of LA South for doing that. I also think that Mr. Stringer said this is a very, very complex issue. And it's very complicated, but I think the amount of time and the amount of staff effort that was done to this project just demonstrates how much work and cooperation and everything else was done on that. So I just applaud the board, I applaud the county and the staff from the City of Malibu for the great work that they did. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Sheldon.
Chairman Yunus, members of the board. Again, I'm Nathan Sheldon, City Malibu Environmental Sustainability Manager. And I'm not going to go into a technical presentation either. It should just take several minutes to go through our remarks. to you. But I just wanted to give to you sort of the city's perspective on the process we went through and all the effort we put in and why we stand by Region Board staff's work in reviewing our UMP and the executive officer's decision to approve our UMP. In 2013, the City of Malibu partnered with Los Angeles County and the Flood Control District to form the North San Juan Bay Coastal Watersheds UMP Group. The group hired a reputable consultant to assist us in developing a sound UMP. Between 2013 and 2015, the group and this consultant put forth a monumental effort to prepare this UMP to meet the requirements set forth by the Regional Board staff. While working on the UMP, the City, Los Angeles County and the Flood Control District were on a parallel track, as you heard, to complete a compliance plan for the ASBS. From a project management perspective, the UMP work plan and the UMP task flows and the ASBS task flows were not aligned in a way that allowed a very simple merging of the data along both project tracks. The UMP started with an early analysis of the data to identify the water body pollutant combinations, whereas the ASBS program was collecting a data stream from February 13 through December 2014, all this after the 2008 investigations. And simply put, I just wanted to say that we stand by Ms. Purdy's remarks on this, that the data was considered, and it did later catch up, although not integrated in the way petitioners would like. It was considered. So again, UMP, the ASBS compliance plan, from the city's project management perspective, two projects on separate tracks that eventually came together in the final group UMP. So the regulatory deadline for submission of the UMP work plan was June 14th, as you saw, and we did meet that deadline. Subsequently, during preparation of the UMP, the group did communicate with Regional Board staff about the 2013-14 ASBS data, and it was agreed to include the ASBS data in the UMP by way of incorporating it as an appendix by appending the ASBS compliance plan. The compliance plan analyzed existing water quality data developed and developed a slate of activities for meeting water quality standards in the ASBS. And these activities are incorporated into the UMP. The UMP is a living document that will be periodically updated, and its implementation program is adaptive to new data and information in the future. The City of Malibu believes the level of water quality protection set forth in the UMP is comprehensive and is stringent. The petitioner suggests modifications to the technical procedures documented in the UMP are unnecessary, and we believe they would afford no additional protections to water quality. In summary, the City of Malibu believes that everything needed to meet the requirements of the permit, including compliance with the conditions of the ASBS general exception, were included in the UMP, and we support the executive officer's approval of this UMP. If you have any questions, you can ask staff here. Every detail you might want to know about this, or this process.
We don't have any additional speaker cards, so are there any questions or comments from the board? What's the question for Mr. Hunter?
I've been trying to imagine what kind of additional information would be presented at such a hearing. To go through some kind of reconsideration, you know, of the approval process. In my mind, we have more than sufficiently satisfied this approval, and I think the process was very thorough. The review was quite rigorous, and the approval appropriate. I'm ready to not go further.
Thank you.
for us, it's a concern with the robustness of the reasonable assurance analysis, and that the net effect of including the data that we think should have been included would be that there should be more VMTs applied in the income area.
My understanding is that the movement as paths are and the stormwater movement are very dynamic, and because we have adaptive management, all new data and BMPs over the period of time will be applied according to the analysis of the data that will be gathered. Is that correct or incorrect?
That's true, although the permit itself says, as an initial matter, that the REA shall commence with assembly of all available relevant sub-watershed data collected within the last 10 years, including land use and pollutant data. So although it's an iterative process, they need to be a sort of baseline level of sort of robustness to the REA.
Just to add to that, while there is this adaptive management process, there's also going to be additional data information available. The permit requires that in order for an EWA to be approved initially, it has to provide it has to provide a reasonable assurance that the BMPs, the control measures proposed in EWA, will actually achieve water quality standards, which is the ultimate goal of the current and of the EWA. And but because the RA in the EWA that was recently approved fails to apply the applicable data and to apply the necessary standards, the required standards, it doesn't even provide that initial assurance that is required by the permit.
And this data was available, so it's our contention that it should have been used. And it may be that in the end, when it is incorporated, there isn't much change, but we need to know that to ensure that the RAA itself is robust.
So I wanted to ask one question to staff too, presentation by staff, which Ms. Curry and Ms. included, seemed to me to be pretty comprehensive and to address much, not all, of the items we brought up in your presentation. And so I'm wondering what do you feel that they answered the issues that you wanted us to consider. It seemed to me that
I don't think all of them. And I think it would be useful to delve in deeper so that we can have more of it's hard, in the context of a short hearing to go through and flip through all the pages of the email to see what matches up with what. But, I think it would be helpful to check what they're saying against what we're saying and then see if there need to be adjustments made to the initial RAA in particular.
Question. Do you have some issues you brought up? I know you heard from our staff and thought there was some issues that you brought up. So, of course, I don't want to be able to comment.
Well, I have to go, and she referred to several specific sections of the ones where I have to go back and look at those to see. To what extent I agree with those characterizations.
Thank you. I guess that's the main question. One of the things that they did raise, and I just wondered if you might be able to, you think you did, but I would like you to just say briefly, since to answer how their contention that this even failed to apply the exception standard. You could answer that. Can you just point that out?
Yes, so they do raise that with regard to two different types of standards. One, standards that pertain to stormwater, and one that pertains to non-stormwater. So let me start with the non-stormwater. which is the ASBS standard for non-stormwater, is that basically non-stormwater discharges from the MS4 are prohibited. And the LA County MS4 permit has that same prohibition. In fact, it is copied essentially verbatim from the ocean plan, what that requirement is. And the EWIMP in several places, including in the dry weather, our reasonable assurance analysis, RAA, makes a commitment and lays out a program to ensure that non-stormwater discharges are 100% eliminated. So that's the standard for non-stormwater, is basically a prohibition on non-stormwater discharges from the MS4. And that is implemented through the EWIMP. For stormwater, the standards are basically, it's kind of a two-part standard. One is that the ocean plan says there can be no alteration of natural water quality that's caused or contributed to by an MS4 discharge. And then if there is an alteration, then there are certain objectives that the MS4 discharges have to comply with. And so it's a standard for both non-stormwater and stormwater discharges, that no alteration of natural water quality. And that's incorporated in the LA County permit through our receiving water limitations and the non-stormwater discharge prohibitions. And it's also included in the EWIMP as part of the attachment E, the ASBS compliance plan. And I do think where part of the disagreement is coming is that inherently that objective of not altering natural ocean water quality, based on our evaluation of the data that was considered by the permittees and included in the EWIMP, including attachment E, the MS4 discharges do not appear to be causing any alteration of natural water quality, with the exception of those pollutants that are already being addressed by TMDLs or are already listed on the 303D list, which have been addressed through their reasonable assurance analysis. So I think that hopefully that answers your question, but I guess the one other thing that I do want to say with regard to the RAA, because I hear that that's a big focus of concern of petitioners, is I want to just return to this idea of controlling pollutants. And as Sam mentioned, I mean, that's a very typical approach that we've used to ensure these EWIMPs are meant to address multiple pollutants in these stormwater retention projects. That was kind of the whole goal of focusing on stormwater retention, is you don't just address one pollutant with a certain type of treatment, but you can address a whole host of pollutants. And so the idea in the RAA is find what that most difficult pollutant is that's going to require the largest volume of stormwater retention or treatment, and design your BMP program around that pollutant, because then you know you'll address the other pollutants as well. And so that's what they've done here. And as I mentioned, the data that were collected under the ASBS were simply not sufficient. We had a discussion with Dr. C.P. Lai. I didn't drag him out here to say, but he basically looked at the data that were collected and said the data were not sufficient to modify the inputs to the RAA model at this point, but that they could be used in the future through adaptive management to recalibrate and validate the RAA and make any adjustments as necessary.
I guess that basically is my last question. Our staff and the teachers and all of us have the same thing in mind, which is to be protective of this special area as possible. And I have great admiration, always have, for the NRC and the water people and all the advocates, and for the work that you are doing on that permit. And I wish that you would
respond to one comment by the petitioners. It was something along the lines of, even if the human was supposed to fully implement it, it would protect water quality. That, you know, that's a broad beginning statement. I'm just wondering if you just provide your perspective on that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I agree. That's it's an important consideration. And as board staff, having looked at this EMUP and considered everything in the EMUP and the proposal in terms of the BMPs, the stormwater retention projects that will be implemented, we do believe it will fully protect the ASBS area and meet the ASBS standards. And part of that speaks to the response that I gave to Board Member Diamond earlier, in that the way that the RIA was conducted, it was conducted in a way that was designed to address multiple pollutants. So in this case, with the data that we currently have available, it does not appear, based on the data evaluation, that the MS4 discharges are causing or contributing to an alteration of natural ocean water quality. But regardless, if they are, the projects that have been identified will address multiple pollutants. And further, as I said, we will be getting more data, and if there's a need to require modification to the EMUP to add additional BMPs at that time, then we have a mechanism through the permit for doing that.
Great, thank you. And obviously, that's all we're here to do. I just want to make sure we have lost sight of our primary mission here.
Right.
Their own mission here. As I said earlier, I don't feel like it's necessarily our job in this particular instance, with this sort of awkward quasi-review process, to step in and second-guess all of the highly nuanced technical judgments that have been made. It sounds like there's some factual sort of disagreements on what's actually in and out. It's a bit confusing to me, but again, my perspective is one of great deference to staff in this particular kind of role, where we have the lead authority, and where there's another kind of level of more formal review. And so I'm very comfortable with moving forward. Or not moving forward. However you want to. I'm very comfortable with the decision that
affirming the decision that's coming.
Thank you.
I have a little bit of a different perspective, and I am absolutely with my colleagues in complimenting everyone. This has been just the evening's been an enormous amount of work. The county, especially not to Denver City, which we have to do work. County is in every one of these evenings. The state, our staff dealt with every one of these evenings. There's so many of the RDC in the work here. And so there's a huge amount of work, much more than any of us ever doing when we approve these permits. Huge amount of work. I'm not sure Renee would have recommended this permit if she didn't actually do it. So what we didn't know, though, is I didn't know, and I'm not sure the rest of the board didn't know, that the ASBS exception rule would be written so that the ASBS exception compliance plan had to be put into the MS4. I think it was done about the same time we were working on the MS4 plan. If we had known it, I think it would have had some provisions in there making sure that the process was more seamless. So I took your time schedule for the EWIPS, which is on page 5, and time schedule for the ASBS that you have on page 6. The EWIPS is on page 6, and the background of the ASBS compliance plan is on page 5, and they're really disjointed schedules. In terms of, for instance, the EWIP work plan is approved in June of 2014. The draft compliance plan for ASBS comes out on 9/14. The draft EWIP is submitted in June 2015, but just 3 months before that, there came back from the state board some very considerable, serious comments by the state board about the draft compliance plan.
So, and a lot of the things that the state board talked about, this does not see me. I actually have seen the letter still. And I pulled out the letter. It says a lot of the same things that the NRDC and AP were saying about the inconsistency of the draft plan with the standards. Particularly, it says that they were using the take B instantaneous maximum water quality objectives and not the standard that is in the ASBS requirements, which is the 85th percentile. And they also talk about the fact that there is a lack of additional structural BMPs, which that's more important to me, is that there was a lack of structural BMPs included in the draft plan to meet some problems that were addressed. And they asked for this. They asked for more mapping, they asked for more monitoring, they asked for more documentation and proposals for additional structural BMPs. So the staff, I understand that sometime after that, I think it was 9/15, that the county and the city submitted a new compliance plan to the state board, and no one's still heard from the state board what they think about that. And we're here today, having had our plans approved several months ago. So it's not an ideal situation. But the question I have for you is, in the submittal of the compliance plan, are you familiar with the letter, the G17 letter? Is there somebody from the staff that's familiar with that letter? Are you familiar with page 2, where they talk about the things that they're concerned about? Those, I just highlighted a couple of them. Was the standard of review, the monitoring standard of review, changed? Were the new structural standards included? I want to make sure, and I'm just saying, I'm sure that there are ways for us to do this, but I want to make sure that eventually we get put into the EWIP the correct standards. It's not clear to me that the ones that we have that are attached to the EWIP now are going to be compromised at all. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about, you've done it a little bit already, whether or not I would feel more comfortable if I knew that you already knew that the revised compliance plan was going to meet the concerns of the state board.
So I do, and it looks like, I was going to attempt to pull it out of my brain, which partly is in my brain. But can you, let's see.
I'm looking at the map of the stormwater runoff ocean, and the top of page 2.
The top of page 2, that's so what I wanted to know, right?
Yeah, and I'm looking at, are you talking about page 2? This is something that's on our screen. It was a letter. I went to this letter because I saw that this was a draft plan, and then there was some discussion of the letter by the NRDC, so I went back. So it has to be the 85th percentile, not the ocean plan, table B, which is was used in the draft compliance.
Right. So I can tell you that in the revised compliance plan, I know that there was a comparison to the 85th percentile. In terms of, and that comparison is of the ocean water quality. So the 85th percentile is basically the reference condition that was developed through the Bite 08 and the Bite 13 programs, and they figured out what is natural water quality, what should it look like based on some reference sites throughout Southern California. And then they compared the data in the ocean water for ASTS 24 to that 85th percentile threshold. And they did that in the revised 2015 compliance plan that they submitted to us. And so that particular issue, I think, has been addressed through the 2015 compliance plan. I think the confusion was in comparison, and then the table B, which now is actually table 1 in the ocean plan, is then what you use to compare the actual MS4 discharge quality to. So the 85th percentile you use for the receiving water quality, and then the table B or table 1 objectives in the ocean plan are what you need to look at for the actual quality of the discharge.
So then that's great. Thank you.
Okay.
There's two more issues, which is that the state board staff contends that poor discharge for ASBS-028 should be identified as a priority discharge location, and that the final compliance plan should describe additional BMP structural BMPs for that site. Was that included in the revised draft that was sent to the state board?
So at this point, I do not believe that any additional structural BMPs are being proposed at ASBS 28. And the reason for that is the three constituents that they found that were elevated in the ocean, which was mercury, selenium, and PAHs, they did not find that the MS4 discharge from that site, outfall 28, had levels of those constituents that were above what was in the table 1 or table B of the ocean plan. So at this point, they're not proposing additional BMPs there. However, I think what I'm waiting to see is the data that they've collected from the winter, this past winter, 15-16, because it's my understanding, and I don't think the county spoke to this, but it's my understanding that they did do another sampling event at the receiving water site, SO2, and then the paired outfall site, 28, and that will give us some more information as to whether there needs to be additional structural measures in that area to address the discharge.
And then the last thing is that the draft compliance plan shows actions being taken to eliminate flows that reach the surface, but not those that don't reach. How then, again, the staff asked how dry weather flows would be eliminated, as well as how those measures would be maintained over time. These are very much, again, the same kinds of issues I read in the petitioner's brief. So how is that resolved in the
So, first of all, with regard to the question of or the distinction between did it reach the SERV or did it not reach the SERV, the EWIMP commits to eliminating all non-stormwater discharges, whether they reach the SERV or not. In fact, part of, I know the city of Malibu didn't take much time to talk about the programs that they had in place, but one of the programs that they've had in place is designed, and they talk about how it's designed to eliminate all non-stormwater discharges to the MS4, period. So that's, I think, the answer to that question. And then with regard to how the measures will be maintained over time and how they'll be monitored and documented, basically they have a suite of measures that do involve public outreach, in ongoing inspections of the outfalls, enforcement if necessary, and they talk about those programs and the ongoing nature of those programs. The other thing with regard to monitoring and documentation, it is basically the program that I described, which is the non-stormwater outfall-based screening program, which they are required to do screening, then they have to do source identification. If they can't identify the source and eliminate the source, then they have to do monitoring, and they have to document all of that and report it, and continue to either, if they can't eliminate the non-stormwater discharge, then they need to somehow either treat it, divert it, somehow address it. So that's how the monitoring and documentation will happen.
So how will eventually, I don't know when, but how will eventually you take what's now a not approved compliance plan? When it gets approved by the state board, hopefully you'll be working on this because you seem to know a whole lot more about it than we do. That how will we integrate that better as just speaking the independence? Because I think that certainly, I do believe that the county met the standards of the MS4 plan in their enhanced management. The city did too.
But I'm still a little bit concerned as to the way the ASBS compliance plan has not been timed well with Auburn, and that ultimately, as right now, we don't really know what the final requirements are going to be. So I would hope that in the future, as they're doing this adaptive management, that they are able to make some revisions and fully incorporate the ASBS compliance report into this so that they're not in some standards. I think that the separations and the different deadlines have really made a lot of confusion for everybody. I have a little bit different take on the role of the board than my colleague, Charlie Stringer. I think of ourselves in a very small scale version of how the legislature, which is very intent on taking a strong oversight role, they develop the legislation, the administration, and all the other entities that they rule, that they have jurisdiction over, implement it. Now they want to take on a role to make sure that everything is working the way they said. So I really feel happy that the board was wise enough to allow ourselves a chance to hear this kind of an appeal of the Portable Substance Safe Board. It was our duty with you. It was our plan. We know it better. We understand how we developed it better. And I really appreciate the opportunity to hear this and raise questions that, since you haven't been really so deep into this, that you might not think of it. Dan, could you talk about what you might do against board concerns and the issues that I talked about?
I think, you know, you're right. The timing of these things was not in perfect alignment, as I said in my presentation. And you know, I think that now that we're getting to the point where there will be a final ASBS compliance plan, it gives us the opportunity for, you know, possible additional integration. And the one thing I just wanted to point out is there's the permit actually envisions this. So you guys were very insightful as we were working on the permit. There was a lot to think about, but we ended up covering a lot of things that could come up during the course of implementing these programs. And there's a section within the watershed management program provisions. You probably remember when we talked about different buckets and different types of pollutants that fell into different buckets. And there was one bucket that was basically for newly identified pollutants, meaning not new pollutants, but ones that we hadn't thought were a problem when the E1s and the ones were initially done, and then it was found that they were a problem later on through monitoring data. And there's a specific process whereby when those are identified, then the watershed management program provisions of the permit require the permittee to then incorporate those pollutants into the EMIM. And the provisions specifically talk about, and it's in part 62A, Roman 3, the permit talks about identifying watershed control measures, so structural BMPs, to address the contribution of that pollutant from M4 discharges, to modify the REA to address that pollutant if it needs to be modified, and then to identify enforceable requirements and milestones with dates to control the discharge so that it doesn't contribute to exceedance as a proceeding level limitation. So if at some point there's new data through the ASBS monitoring or through the monitoring that's being done under the permittee's coordinated monitoring program that shows that there are additional pollutants that are causing problems in terms of the ASBS area, then there's specific provisions that speak to that and require that then the EWIM needs to be modified to address those pollutants. I'll turn it over to Sam.
I think the bigger frame is I want to make sure that we do eventually get this compliance plan written into the and it's something that you can't require to have done until we, but I think it's something that ought to be. I hope that you work with the city and the county and the IRMC to make sure that when it's finally approved, that your staff is very active involved with that, and that the
and that everyone is engaged in doing this. I can't emphasize enough to my colleagues, there are a million people in this area recommending public planning. It is one of very few marine managed areas that are set up for protection of incredible diversity of species. The reason that we have the ocean plan with no discharge is to protect those species. And so we have a higher order requirement in this area than we do elsewhere. And I want to make sure that it's implemented. I think everyone has good will here, but I want to make sure that it is treated differently than areas where we have exactly the opposite problem, which is awareness problem and global pollution that we need to be able to.
I really don't think I have much to add other than sort of a view from what Charlie taught me as the meta level, if you will. I just think that the idea that the state board and regional board are going to land on the same priorities and the same schedule is not going to happen. Basically, I mean, you have essentially 2,000 staff to regulate water quality and save 35 million people, and it's our priorities are going to be different. In fact, I don't know how close the ASPS compliance plan is to this agreement, but it's not exactly there. So the only thing I think we have, which we built in, is this adaptive management, if you will. And certainly, SAMP is very active. And
can the wording of the plan be adjusted if necessary when the final compliance plan is done?
Well, then that one I'm going to ask Jennifer to provide me.
I just want to make sure, when I hear about an appendix, I hear about something that you use to make a decision that's reflected in the plan itself.
I'm not sure about that.
Right now, this second draft, which is the compliance plan, is an appendix that's referenced in the text. It doesn't sound like it actually influenced the plan. And then what was done afterwards. And so I want to make sure that it's integrated into the EWIP and made part of it the way that both the ASPS law required and our plan required.
Is that, I'm not confused in what you just said. I was under the impression that it has been, it was approved, the approved authority for executive officer who approve this one.
Oh no, I'm talking about the ASPS plan. It's not been approved. And when it is approved, it has not been approved. He said, he's right, getting our approval from the state board is they're in charge of these plans, not us. But their plan has to be implemented through the end of the board. And I want to make sure that it's really part of the end of the board. And I'm asking whether or not it changes the community. Can we understand the sports grid that this board approved if it's too expensive?
But is that not a separate issue from what is before the board today? Today is just simply should be granted consideration.
Well, we'll never see it again if we decide to grant the reconsideration. This is the only time
we have the adaptive management as well. We have the adaptive management process.
I think that I'm asking for something quite different. Adaptive management, taking an action to say, okay, this didn't work, we're going to try something else. This is, if the ASPS plan requires some change in the basic municipal plan, can they do it? And can they do it? It's very different than adaptive management in terms of the action that would be required. I'm talking about a plan where everybody can be looking at it and reading the same thing as opposed to the kinds of things that we've heard about today, well, this is in the appendix, and we didn't use this data, this is the standard, but that's not the standard. There's a lot of inconsistency in terms of how different people are viewing this process, and how particularly because of the problem that the ASPS plans have been really controlling.
I hear what you're saying and what you're asking. I would say that, I mean, I failed to mention this. I don't know if it was in the written memorandum, but we actually did comment on the ASPS compliance plan. That was part of the comments that staff provided to the committees. We asked them to ensure that the measures that were being implemented through the ASPS compliance plan plan were integrated into the ELIM. And so any of the measures that are being implemented, the actual BMPs, the storm, the structural projects, things like that, there is consistency between the ASBS compliance plan and the ELIM, because the ELIM has all the things that they proposed and committed to in the compliance plan are also committed to in the main body of the ELIM. I think the main difference really is where they consider the data. And the data, because they're unique to the ASPS area, were presented and considered in Appendix E. And so it's, I think in part, there's, because this is a unique ELIM where we, as I started out with, we have half that's outside the ASPS, we have half that's inside the ASPS. They have this separate plan because of the timing as well. It turned out the way it did. But all the measures that they're actually going to be implementing are in the ELIM as well as the ASPS compliance plan.
And so you have some knowledge that the ASPS compliance plan is going to be approved as written?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't have that.
I think that's what you're not. Maybe I'm just not going there.
No, I think it.
I'm being clear where I'm asking. If there's this change that the staff requires, that would also require changes in the ELIM itself, can those be done?
Yes, they
okay.
can.
That's all I need to know.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I thought I was being clear.
Yeah, and I'm sorry because I responded to that one. Yes, they can absolutely be addressed in the ELIM. Any changes, and that's what I definitely wanted to convey that point, and so I'm glad you asked the question because that is our intention, is if there are changes to the ASBS compliance plan that then would require additional BMPs or would require additional work in the ELIM, then the ELIM can be modified and will be modified to address those changes.
I just want to conclude then that while I thought that some of the issues had that the petitioner raised had merit, I think our setup is possible, and especially with their willingness to continue to follow this process through and make changes to the system.
Are there any additional comments or questions?
I'd like to move to support.
So the options that you had laid out was whether what the decision expected out of today was to whether to review the petition or not review the petition. So I think what you're trying to do is make a motion for the board not to review the petition for this policy motion for.
That's right.
Okay.
Motion as stated.
Second amendment. Roll call vote, please.
Ms. Steiner?
Yes.
Ms. Lichtbauer?
Yes.
Ms. Munoz?
Yes.
Mr. Stringer?
Yes.
And Mr. Lee?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, we're going to take a 15-minute break and back at 3:15. Now on our last item, item number 7, which is the consideration of the tentative waste discharge permit for the bars and water remediation departments and the inner season system for the fiscal company and for the whole line company. Staff report, please. Mr. Boone. Dr. Boone. You've got the school, you've got the doctor.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Munoz. Good afternoon, Chair Munoz again, and members of the board. Again, my name is Eric Wu, Chief of Power Company Units. With me today is Section Chief Dr. Rebecca Xu. Now I would like to take a chance to acknowledge the project manager, Mrs. Mercedes Marino, who has transferred to Region 5 personal office. Item 7.1 in today's agenda are the discharge requirements. and water reclamation requirements which pertain to both the existing Paradise Cove mobile home park and beach cafe wastewater treatment systems, and the future Paradise Cove wastewater treatment plant, which will consolidate both the wastewater treatment systems, add additional filtration and disinfection, and treat the wastewater to qualify for recycled requirements. There is also a companion cease and desist order, item 7.2, for the charter, the diesel company, and the Paradise Cove land company to regulate effluent water quality from the two existing systems before the upgrade is complete, and allow time for the construction of a combined system to meet the recycled water standard. And the Kiss Company and the Paradise Cove then company own and operate the Paradise Cove mobile home park and the Paradise Cove beach cafe located at 28128 Pacific Coast Highway, Malibu, California. The site is about 6 miles west from the Malibu City Center Prohibition area. Here is the aerial view of the Paradise Cove mobile home park and the beach cafe. The red line defines the boundary of the mobile home park, and the beach cafe is on beach, highlighted in yellow. To the north of the park is the Pacific Coast Highway. The Pacific Ocean to the south and the Ramirez Canyon Creek to the east. The park occupies about 68 acres, on which there are 156 mobile homes. Homes on the south edge of the bluff are approximately 80 feet above the beach. The mobile home park and the disposal area overlie the groundwater basin at the southern slope of Santa Monica Mountain at Point Dune area. This groundwater aquifer is designated with beneficial uses of the municipal and domestic water supply and agricultural supply. The beach cafe, located on the flat arc-shaped beach, is approximately 150 feet from the Pacific Ocean and 70 feet from the Ramirez Creek culvert. The beach cafe is a single-story building with a seating of 300 persons. Because the beach cafe and the treated wastewater disposal area are right on the beach, and the groundwater underneath the beach cafe disposal area is under the ocean water's influence, the California Ocean Plan standards are applicable. There are no domestic wastewater supply wells downgraded or within the premises of the mobile home park and the beach cafe. Both the park and cafe receive their water supply from the Los Angeles County Water Works, District 29. Currently, there are two separate wastewater treatment systems that treat wastewater from the Paradise Cove mobile home park and the beach cafe. The next two slides will explain these two systems because the planned upgrade will continue to use these two existing systems for the effluents, which will be combined and further treated to recycle water standards, the new treatment system. This slide presents some history on the current regulations for the existing wastewater treatment system at the Paradise Cove Mobile Home Park. On May 23, 2002, the Regional Board adopted the waste discharge requirements, order number R4-2002-0108, for the discharge of wastewater from the mobile home park wastewater treatment system. The 2002 WDRs for the mobile home park prescribed effluent limitations for total dissolved solids, DOD-5, total coliform, and enterococcus. The only groundwater limits was for total nitrogen. In order to have time to meet the effluent limitations, the discharge was also issued time schedule orders. The time schedule orders allow time for the discharger to abandon and remove the old septic tanks and install at the next on-site wastewater treatment system, which was the very first one in the Malibu area. The advanced on-site wastewater treatment system, or the advanced on-site wastewater treatment system, or AOWTS, provides secondary treatment including nitrification, and the nitrification to reduce nitrogen-related compounds in the wastewater, and followed with this infection process to remove bacteria such as Enterococcus holocoliform and Pecocoliform. The construction included 18 primary treatment tanks, 2 underground circulation tanks, a PET-bag treatment system, and a chlorination dosing tank. In addition, an ultraviolet system was installed to provide tertiary treatment for disinfection. The treated wastewater was then discharged to sewage pit. The advanced onset wastewater treatment system was completed on August 13, 2007, and it is still operational. The current protocol mobile home park wastewater treatment system has a design capacity for an average flow of about 40,000 gallons per day and a peak flow rate of 60,000 gallons per day. The existing sewage pit for the park has a total design capacity for disposal of 73,464 gallons per day. This slide presents the regulatory history of the beach cafe. On December 29, 2003, the regional board enrolled Paradise Cove Beach Cafe under the State Water Resources Control Board General WDRs, order number 97-10-DWQ, titled General WDRs for the discharges to land by small domestic wastewater treatment systems, which regulated the discharge from the beach cafe on said wastewater treatment system. On April 24, 2012, the discharger submitted a work plan to upgrade the existing system with the addition of an equalization tank to mitigate peak flows and the 2 aerators which could further reduce the nutrient concentration during treatments. A chlorination tank was also added to provide disinfection. The advanced on-site wastewater treatment system was completed in 2014. The current beach cafe advanced wastewater treatment system has a treatment capacity of 25,000 gallons per day. After primary treatment in a tank underneath the parking lot of the beach cafe, wastewater is then pumped to the secondary treatment system on a bluff approximately 800 feet northeast of the restaurant and for chlorination. The disinfected effluent is then discharged to sewage pits, which are also on a bluff. The disposal area is approximately 80 feet above the beach and 250 feet away from the Pacific Ocean. The total disposal capacity for these sewage pits is 23,159 gallons per day. Due to the discharge location where the receiving groundwater has a hydraulic connection with the ocean, the California Ocean Plan standards are applicable and used as the groundwater limitation. When the mobile home park advanced treatment system was completed in 2009, the discharger struggled with the turbidity problem, which resulted into the dysfunction of the disinfection process. After the efforts of adjusting the biological treatment process and increasing the cleaning frequency of the ultraviolet plant, the mobile home park treatment system became in compliance with the effluent limitations. The last exceedance of Enterococcus and Holocoliform was in November of 2014. Because there were no groundwater quality objectives prescribed except the nitrogen compounds, the discharger has no groundwater quality violations. The beach cafe wastewater treatment system is regulated by the state general permit. There are no effluent water quality limits except a limit for discharge volume. During major holiday weekends, such as the Labor Day weekend, the discharge volume would exceed the discharge limit of 20,000 gallons per day. The groundwater samples collected in the downgraded well indicated that the groundwater was infected with Enterococcus. Multiple notices of violations were issued in 2006, 2008, and 2011. To correct the problem, in 2012, the charger proposed to the addition of an equalization tank, a circulation tank for nutrient reduction, and a chlorination tank for disinfection. The upgrade was completed in 2014. The coronation process successfully removed and recovered fecal coliform and coliform and effluent during summer of 2015 and up to the March of this year only. Because the existing permit for mobile home park and beach cafe are obsolete and need to be updated with additional effluent and groundwater limitations in order to be consistent with all current requirements and to be more enforceable to ensure compliance, the revised WR have been prepared. The department needs time to construct the connection between the two current systems, as well as the upgrades to meet the recycled water standards and to address any current treatment issue. And because of the history of the inconsistent reliability of the treatment process and its operation, and violation that has occurred, a tentative cease and desist order is proposed to manage this transition. Given the need of to a future upgrade the WDR for these facilities to include more protective requirements that are more enforceable, staff prioritize this site for renewing WDRs. On October 2nd, 2015, the regional board issued a 3260 directive requiring the discharger to submit a report of waste discharge for the mobile home park. The ROWP was subsequently received on November 2nd, 2015. To verify the information provided in the ROWP, staff conducted an inspection on January 26, 2016. During the inspection, the charter conveyed their interest in combining the effluent from both systems and recycle the wastewater. On February 3rd, 2016, a report titled Conceptual Plan and Timeline for Improving Effluent Quality, Planning Effluent and Installing Subsurface Drip Reuse at Fairbanks Cove was submitted to the regional board and to the Division of Drinking Water. This conceptual plan includes keeping and optimizing existing treatment systems at both the mobile home park and beach cafe, and providing additional treatment for recycling. The plan was approved by the Division of Drinking Water on June 14 this year. This flowchart explains the treatment trend for the future Fairbanks Cove wastewater treatment plant. The treatment system separately at the mobile home park and beach cafe will remain in place and will be optimized. Treated effluent from the both system will be combined. This is the mobile home park and the beach cafe. They will be combined and further treated by the filtration and the chlorination. The final effluent after meeting the Title 22 recycled water requirements will be used for subsurface drip irrigation. The sink pit will only be used as a backup system in case the treated wastewater cannot be recycled due to the weather conditions. Based on records, the average discharge from the mobile home park was about 40,000 gallons per day and about 18,500 gallons per day from each cafe, which had total volume of 58,400 gallons per day. Therefore, the treated wastewater can be 100% recycled during the normal discharge average flow. And this is a map showing the location of the future combined system. Each cafe mark brown. With brown color is the upper right of the map where the primary treatment system is located at a parking lot area. The effluent from the primary treatment is pumped to the glove over here to for the secondary treatment and disinfection. And moving up to along the PCH, the yellow highlighted area is the advanced treatment system for the mobile home park. When both systems are combined, the discharge effluent from the beach cafe over here will be pumped along the PCH over to the mobile home park area and combined with effluent from the mobile home park. treated for the filtration and disinfection at the right area over here. The treated acid will be used for the holding pump to the area over here, shaded green, for the subsurface filter irrigation. The recycled water area is about 1.5 acres and can use up to 60,000 gallons per day of the treated wastewater. All existing sewage pit at the mobile home park area or at the beach cafe area will only be used as the backup system when the treated wastewater cannot be recycled for landscape irrigation when it rains. This combined wastewater treatment system will be referred to as the Paradise Cove Wastewater Treatment Plant. The treated wastewater actually meets the more protective effluent limitation based on the basin plan and the federal financial recycled water standards will be recycled to offset the volume of potable water needed for vegetation maintenance. They improve the effluent water quality from Paradise Cove wastewater treatment plant, and the reduction of the discharge volume to groundwater will protect the groundwater quality, public health, and beneficial uses for underlying groundwater and adjacent surface waters. The existing mobile home park in the yards only have indication for BOD total suspended solid oil increase to 50 total dissolved solid for chloroform and enterococcus. For beach cafe, there are no effluent limitations in the general DR. The new WORs in front of you today include revised and more stringent effluent limitations highlighted in yellow to ensure that the treated effluent meets recycled water standards for subsurface irrigation and are protected of surface and groundwater and public health. These limits are based on Title 22 and the basin plan. In addition, conditions specified in the Division of Treated Waters approval letter and water reclamation requirements for the use of recycled water are incorporated into these permits. At the bottom of the table, the enterococcus limits only applies to the beach base discharge at the current location before the upgrade is completed. Title 22 recycled water requirements do not have a limitation for enterococcus. The existing permit for mobile home park did not prescribe groundwater quality limitations except for the nitrogen related compounds. And the applicable groundwater quality limits for beach cafe disposal area only reference the California Ocean Plan. This revised permit adds more stringent requirements on residual water quality, and the groundwater shall meet the basin plan groundwater quality objectives. The discharge cannot immediately achieve compliance with the requirements contained in the tentative WDR-WOR. Therefore, this tentative cease and desist order set forth a time schedule to allow the discharger time to complete actions to be in compliance with the WDR-WORs. The discharger shall immediately comply with interim limitations prescribed separately for mobile home park and beach cafe on-site wastewater treatment systems. The interim limitations are calculated based on the existing effluent data and the applicable regulations, including the California Ocean Plan. These interim limitations are calculated again based on the 99th and 95th percentiles of the monitoring data submitted by the discharger. The discharger shall complete these major tests in the tentative cease and desist order. By January 30, 2017, the discharger shall submit a work plan to investigate possible sources of the total dissolved solids sulfate chloride in the effluent. By November 3, 2017, the discharger shall begin construction, installation, and upgrades to combine the park and beach cafes on several water treatment systems. By June 1, 2018, the discharger shall complete all constructions and upgrades needed for the Paradise Cove wastewater treatment plant. And as soon as possible, but no later than September 1st, 2018, the discharger shall achieve full compliance with all requirements in the new WDR-WORs. The discharger shall submit quarterly reports on progress of the construction and Wales. The tentative WDRs and the cease and desist order were circulated for public comment. By the end of the comment period, the detractors consulted the banks on Sidewalker and Gila Bay both submit their comments. On behalf of the charter, the consultant advanced on Sidewalker commented on the effluent and groundwater limitation to be unreasonable and excessive. All permits, including this tentative WDRs, shall be consistent with the basin plan as well as the state law, regulations, and policies. Paradise Cove overlies the groundwater basin designated with municipal water supply and energy uses. The basin plan describes specific groundwater project objectives for the groundwater basin at the Point Dune to protect public health, safety, and welfare, and the drinking water supply. The recycled water used for subsurface irrigation shall meet the drinking water maximum contaminant levels specified in the Title 22 of California Water Code. The tribe commented that the TDS, boron, salt, and chloride are naturally occurring at the site due to the marine deposits. Therefore, the background concentrations of these constituents exceed the effluent limits. The salt concentration in the effluent depends on the drinking water supply and the fishing from the household and the beach cafe. The drinking water for Paradise Cove is supplied by Los Angeles County Water Works, District 29, not by the local groundwater wells. Therefore, the natural occurring salt content undermine the site will not result in the elevated TDS, chloride, sulfate, or boron in the effluent. Another comment was regarding the new effluent limits of enterocarbons for beach conveyed. Based on a monitoring report received that summarizes data from the second quarter of 2016, there were several effluent samples with enterocarbons exceeding 104 NPN to represent most probable numbers, which have caused impact to groundwater. The chlorination at Beach Cove Bay wastewater treatment system functions properly in the past. The discharges show identify and fix the problem, whether it is the process design or operation or both, as soon as possible and no later than 3 months from the adoption of this tentative WDRs. Therefore, Table 5 of the revised tentative WDRs number 4 in your 4 package, page 7-025, will be revised to reflect the applicable time to be from December 8, 2016 to August 31st, 2018. And we'll have a change sheet document all this later on. Gilda Bay requested the regional board to include the mandatory penalties in the CDO in the event that the charter does not meet the stated obligation schedule. Regional board assumed that the commenter is referring to the stipulated penalties pursuant to the Water Code Section 3308. Such penalties are not appropriate at this time. In order to assess stipulated penalties in the CDO, the regional board would need to determine that the charter has threatened to violate or will continue to violate the CDO. At this time, there is no evidence indicating that the discharger threat or continue to violate the CDO willfully. As the CDO has not been issued yet, it is premature and inappropriate to incorporate stipulated penalties into the CDO. While the discharger has had a compliance issue in the past, we know for that it is committed to closely overseeing the construction and implementation of the upgrades at the mobile home park and beach cafe pursuant to the schedule in the CDO. If there is any evidence that the charter will not meet the deadline in the CDO, the regional board could, if warranted, issue an order for the stipulated penalties or proceed with an enforcement action. To be consistent with the staff responses to comments raised by the charter, and two correct typos, a change sheet was prepared. The first two rows, and I think what distributed to you earlier before the beginning of this item. The first two rows at the bottom, second and third rows, are clarification of the site information. As mentioned in the response comments, effluent from fish clay treatment system shall either enter toxic limits of permit or NPN 3 months from the adoption date of this permit. Therefore, the footnote, table 5 in your page 4 packages, page 7-025, will be revised. And that is up at the bottom of this cheat sheet. Here are options. The board can proceed to adopt items number 7.1, the revised tentative of the WRs, and 7.2, the tentative cease and desist order with the change sheet. Or the board can direct staff to modify the revised tentative of the WRs and the CDO as logical outgrowth, and then the board can adopt them with the change sheet or take no action. In this case, the old permits separate for Paradise Cove mobile home park and fish cafe will remain in effect. Staff recommends the board to adopt item numbers 7.1, the revised tentative of the WRs, and 7.2, the tentative cease and desist order as presented, and along with the cheat sheet. And this will conclude my presentation.
Are there any questions or comments before we proceed?
I have one question.
Please send it.
Dr. Wu, just I want to make sure I understand. You showed the map with one of the beginning of your presentation. Is the proposal to simply take the effluent from the beach cafe unit as is right now, with a little large map that showed all the units?
Okay.
So are we going to still have two units operating and then they're going to be released up at the top, or are we going to actually physically demolish the one that's existing right now with the restaurant and expand the one at the top?
Well, thank you for the chance for the clarification. I think that the current proposal that brought by the charter is to keep both systems separately at the beach cafe and the mobile home park. So what would happen is that the wastewater effluent from the mobile home park, let me try to see what is here on that. This is the beach cafe. The beach cafe, the primary treatment will be at the parking lot and pump up for the secondary treatment disinfection. All the system over here for beach cafe will remain the same here, but the treated effluent will be pumped over here to the mobile home park area. And then, at the same time, the mobile home park system will stay in place, also with a dedicated system that includes the identification and the coordination and the UV for disinfection.
So they'll get additional treatment. Water will get additional treatment.
And the water, by the water problem system will be combined, and then will go on additional another layer of treatment after the system are combined, for the filtration and disinfection over here in the red marker in red. And then, yes, then both will stay. They will be optimized first, combined, and going through the third treatment system before they got used for the recycled water.
So related to that question is the beach itself, the number of people coming to that beach itself, far exceeds the parking capacity in the area. It just goes, the parking goes for a mile up and down. How much kind of data did the applicant collect to estimate the size of the seven distant bathroom facilities that we need to accommodate just the beach shores that are not leasing this?
In the past years, we look at the monitoring report, the major compliance issue for the beach cafe is the exceedance of the flow. So in year 2012, the beach cafe proposed to install the equalization tank to address this issue. Because the beach cafe was currently regulated under general permit, the flow limit is 20,000 gallons per day. But during the major weekend, such as Labor Day weekend or the 4th of July weekend, that usually there are millions of people going to, a lot of people going to the beach cafe. So the flow based on the rate we have is in the range of 22,000 gallons per day in those major weekends. So that's where the violation came from. And so after the beach cafe installed the equalization tank, which has a capacity or increase the capacity to 25,000 gallons per day, it should be sufficient to address the additional water discharge from the beach cafe.
So you're saying that there's no way of separating that the beach cafe from the beach house?
Currently, I believe that the bathroom fixture for the beach cafe or for beach cafe, I don't know how many of the beach goers actually use the bathroom. And we are.
You're separate out sandbox.
Right, it's called sandbox. And I think that that one also going to the same system. And
that's the last, yeah.
It will be a sensitive this is already pointed out to you. If you would turn to page 070.
070.
Right.
So that's 5A2B.
Yes. That is all the tests that the charger is required to do according to the system this is already. And this is going to be done before the. This is a test for them to bring to combine the system and also maintain the operation of all systems currently on site.
So those are the dates that various items need to be completed.
Yes.
And in January 2017, and includes no later than September 1st, 2018.
Yes.
I have a question on the streets. Thank you for your presentation. We now have Mr. Bobber from Paradise Grove and Barbara for 10 minutes, and Barbara for having an additional 10 minutes as well. And following so the city amount for 10 minutes and a city of Park. So, Ms. Bobber, please come to me.
Good morning, Sheriff. You know, as members of the board, I don't need 10 minutes. Can I get a Barbara Rowley's on my phone? She probably can talk about it. I'll be brief. I just want to first thank staff for the professionalism and candor and communication that's been carried out this process. They've really gone above and beyond, and it's been a very positive experience getting to this point. While the outcome has not always been as perfect as we would have liked in the past, there's never been a shortage of efforts we've sort of put forth to try to have the best possible wastewater treatment system in Paradise Cove. We've made great strides and we're committed to meeting the effluent limits going forward. I know, I understand there may be some concerns about the applicant given the history before the board. I could spend all of my time dragging you through a history of bankruptcies and litigation and chapter 11s and all that good stuff, but I'm more focused on trying to solve problems we've got and going forward and complying with the revised WDR. I would also, however, like to address some of the comments made by Gila Bay. While we will not claim to be anywhere close to perfect, the claims alleged by Gila Bay are dishonest and misleading at best. The claims made by she refers to numerous spills brought to the Rivera's Creek, and while even one spill is too many, she's referring to events that occurred 10 to 20 years ago. Her reference to ocean water quality ignores the fact that the Rivera's Creek is lined in concrete on its path across Paradise Cove, as well as the existence of numerous sports properties and hundreds of birds that play on the beach and on the pier, impacting the water quality at the bottom of the Ramirez Creek. In that vein, it was interesting sitting here watching the previous hearing, because we partnered with the city of Malibu to put a stormwater treatment plant on the bottom of Rivera's Creek. While a truly special location, Gila Bay is not bothered to check with the owners of this special piece of property to understand the reality of rent control, bankruptcy, litigation, and the time it took to recover from all of this in the late 1990s and early 2000s. I assure you now, though, we have ample resources and we're prepared to put our best foot forward and comply with pending WDR. I also find it interesting that they use the new Civic Center treatment system as an example of how things should be done. While I wholeheartedly support this project, the reality is that we're not groups for not for the efforts of groups like the Los Angeles Waterkeeper, which I sit on board, and this board, the city would never have backed us for this project. Construction is just now commencing, and the project is several years behind the original schedule. Further, the new system does, in fact, make use of on-site disposal. In fact, Paradise Cove will be reusing a significantly higher percentage of its treated wastewater than the city. I also think it's premature to refer to the use of septic pits as archaic, as they are still required in the wet weather. Again, thank you for your time and consideration of this for my place to start a requirement. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have after doing this program. Thank you.
I'm Barbara Bradley of the Nassau Site Water and have been the wastewater engineer for Paradise Cove the last 15 years. And I would like to say also that the staff have been exemplary, and it has created so much trust and cooperation that simply wasn't there 10 years ago. It was a very different environment. So I just wanted to say that. Okay, so what I'd like to go over very quickly is, again, reiterating there is a commitment to meeting water quality. And we have absolutely no contest or even discussion on the ways to start the apartments we agree with them. And we'd like to at least also request that you acknowledge the water quality achievements that have been in place for some time, and we wish to share with the operational challenges that we've been facing. First of all, our biggest concern with the issues is that the interim limits are, in many cases, simply not achievable within the time frame that has been given. It's not that we don't want to achieve them, it's just that we don't want to have violations for something that physically can't be done that fast, either through the design process or the permitting process, or the very fact that the contractor can immediately get on board as soon as those things have come through. And there are also issues that have been there about chloride, and perhaps this one not so much for the future, because we believe that will be resolved once the treated wastewaters are blended. But the most important one we're really concerned about is the material pockets, because that one has been the biggest challenge throughout all the periods to be in compliance with the system. And it's going to take 6 months. It's not three. We're asking for additional 3 months to go from December 2016 to March of 2017. We're just asking for additional 3 months because to get through the design, to do it right and get the permitting, get through the permitting of the city, and to get the contractor, to get all the equipment, order on time, those things, it takes time. And we are looking at doing things in the interim that have nothing to do with the final treatment system, just because we want to get this taken care of for Beach Cafe. And with that, we sometimes know that if there's an enterococcus exceeded, then maybe there's coliform turbidity at the same time. So those are all the things we try and work on together. And at the mobile home park, we're quite concerned about the sulfate because there were not monitoring requirements for it before, and as a result, we only have a few data points we've collected just in the last few months. And the limit that is set is simply set the highest concentration that we found, but there's no possibility, there's definitely a possibility it could be higher. And so, why not give us something that'll give us some time to work on, figure out where's this little bit coming from, what kinds of treatment can we implement, which would be in addition to what we have already proposed for the treatment system. And lastly, we're asking that there is an investigation that is going to be started immediately, and it will have to do with the sulfate and other constituents, and we don't know, again, what it will take to implement the treatment. We actually have no idea what that treatment would be yet, and we're quite concerned about that, because that, in particular, if we go back at the end of the investigation and say, well, we have the results of that, but it's going to take more time to do this in construction, there's an opportunity to compact and have staff consider it. Here's a photo. Aerial Beach Cafe is over here. Here's the beach cafe with the parking. Up here is the treatment system. This is under construction. There are new tanks under here, a new control building over that area. And what you probably can't see is that it's so small. This is this new dosing tank for the chlorination. So this is actually, I'd like also if you would please acknowledge these two systems in a historical context, that when this came up, there was hardly anything of this size. And not just here, but throughout California. These were new, back in 2006 and earlier. So we've been doing quite a lot of work since then, had upgrades everywhere around, but one of the problems that's been fine since 2014 had a lot of problems with the pre-aeration system. Without going into all of the things that happened there, we're simply seeing that none of it has been satisfactory. We thought we had a good one, we had replaced it, we had the same kind of electrical problem. We haven't been very in place, but we're finding that the summer loadings, it hasn't been good enough. We need to improve that. So that's one of the reasons why we're asking for this additional time to get this fixed. And very sadly, this year has really brought home that the operating spent a long time has simply had too many health effects that have been affecting the spring. And it has become very, very evident in the lack of response to the high levels and repeatedly high levels of Terracottas in neglecting to inform either the owner or me as the engineer. And so we're kind of running down to catch up on this, but recognizing that it's simply not possible for him to continue. So the process is in place. We've located good candidates, state-certified operators. It's a matter of, selecting the right one, getting them into contract. And we just didn't dare do this in the middle of the summer to have an operator switch over, but now is a good time to get that going. So that's probably one of the biggest issues I have. But the bottom line is we're really asking for 6 months instead of 3 for this to be able to have some success with this. And it's not that we don't want to do it, we just know realistically what it takes to get the right systems in place. Very quickly, Global Home Park was the biggest treatment system of its time at the time. And it has been pretty good for just about everything. In fact, both of them have, in terms of pollutants, but there have been issues. There were some in the beginning, but really we've been seeing a steady improvement all along. And so we're very, very excited about the water recycling. We believe this to be a win-win all the way around, for the waters of California, for the property owner, and for water quality. So this really, I think, is probably the only concern there is we don't know enough about the sulfate. And so we're just asking for an interim limit of 300 instead of 274. 274. because we don't know what the high levels will be, but we'll start monitoring and find out if we're not to be in exceedance until we can figure out how to treat it. Then if again we find out there are issues that come up in this investigative report, which isn't due until next year in the summer, then we may be coming back and we would like to come back to staff to consider, but we will be keeping staff up to date on our schedule and how things are developing throughout this period. I think that's required, and I think that's a very good idea. And I just wanted to say, this has not been without a great deal of expense on the part of the owner, with $5 million for the original treatment systems and $1 million in the infrastructure repairs at Mobile Home Park, so he could repair the sewer lines and getting them up to snow. That will win along with this. The beach cafe upgrades were another $3.5 million. So you can see these efforts have not been small over this period of time. And I'm looking at an even higher outlay for this recycled water. So this is a big commitment. It's not just fix what's there, but make it much better. And with that, I'd just like to thank you for considering these requests.
Thank you. Is there a representative from the city council? Let's see. We do have a speaker card from Ms. Johnson. Please come forward and we'll open up the questions and comments.
Good afternoon, Chairman Yost, board members. My name is Stephen Johnson, and I am the Water Resources Policy Analyst for the Bay. I think it's about time to speak. First of all, we appreciate the time the Water Board staff has spent on this issue, as well as their willingness to discuss it with us. As we stated in our comment letter, we are supportive of the Kessel Company and Paradise Coast plan to expand on-site treatment to allow for water recycling and reduce flows from their current sewage pools. However, given the history of the site, we are best cautiously optimistic about this project occurring according to schedule. Yes, this history goes back a while, as previous speakers stated. However, we also heard today that there continue to be exceedances on the site. That said, as mentioned before, we are supporting the proposed project. We just want to ensure that it happens as scheduled. In consideration of Paradise Coast's chronic violations over the past decade, we believe it would be in the best interest of the homeowners and the beachgoers of Paradise Cove to have a more cautionary cease and desist order. We recommend that a mandatory civil penalty be included in the event that this charter does not meet the order's stated objections, obligations, and schedule. We appreciate the opportunity to comment on this in our written comments on the cease and desist order, and we apologize for not using more precise language in our written comments because of the responses. As staff said previously, they assumed incorrectly that we were referring to stipulated penalties pursuant to Water Code 13308. Based on our research, we see no language in Water Code 13308 preventing the board from creating mandatory civil penalties as part of the cease and desist order. This would better ensure that the schedule is followed and this ongoing issue is finally addressed. Further, this would be prudent and cautionary concerning the popularity of the site. Here today, it's very pleased to hear that the regional board staff are committed to closely overseeing the construction and implementation of the upgraded water treatment plant. And we assure the board that Hill Bay will also make similar efforts to keep a close eye on the project in the months to come. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Board members, questions or comments?
So this is a question for the Paradise Company folks. You're essentially asking for an additional 3 months to the deadlines that are listed in the CEO, is that correct?
Yes, the staff in the change sheet have suggested 3 months and they're asking for 6, simply because I've been working in Paradise in the city of Malibu with permitting for many, many years. And I can tell you, 3 months is extremely difficult.
So staff has suggested 3, you're asking for 6, so what you're really asking for is an additional 3 months on top of what they're
That's correct.
Okay, staff's response to that.
This is Eric again. By reviewing the account that are provided by the charter, I don't think that the charter actually have a very clear picture about how to resolve this issue yet. So at this point, there's no actual construction or any actual action that they plan or propose that will require the permitting to be the issue to be resolved. So, and also a factor of time that the beginning of the violation was in March of this year, that the charter actually had time since then to plan to resolve this issue. So my second recommendation is that if the charter will be actively to resolve this issue, then it should have been done. And I think that 3 months is to accommodate the need for them to further identify any possible means to resolve this. And again, based on the information we have and also the information provided by the charter, we don't see there's any construction yet at this point. It was not proposed in with the details at this point.
So the skill of the bay is coming up in the beginning of financial penalties involved in case the deadlines are down.
I'm a little perplexed by that, and I really don't want to assume that they were talking about the stipulated penalties for some water fund section 13, which what the board attempted to do several years ago and it wasn't done the right way, so it didn't work. But I'm not quite saying when they say mandatory civil penalties. I don't know if that for mandatory penalties, mandatory minimum penalties, which are for MMPs, will apply to MPDS permits only. There's no mechanism in water code to insert what they call mandatory civil penalties in order. So I'm not really understanding what they mean by that. There is water code section 13.08 penalties, but that's not appropriate. Yeah, there's coordination and record.
You guys want to just help with my amendment while we continue to make
sure.
Chairman, I just wanted to add a little bit to Eric's response on the videos that someone was going to add and or out. I do agree that when we first put out this permit, look back to last June, and they were able to find this place in the office. And then just recently, we got the second quarter's worth of data, and we saw that from March, and the quarter's this year on the May problems. So that's why we put in a new limit, because we feel like the best way to ensure that this is fixed and it doesn't go on for 2 years while we're in the new system is to put that in. We put in the 3 months. Eric is correct that. We still quite don't know what the plan is. I mean, they said in the letter that they're going to put in an area or things like that. We don't have a typical schedule we have, but what we did hear that was new today is the commitment to find a new operator, which we feel is the key part of the problem here. It's not the system itself, although it seems to be a part of the piece that was the issue, but they were in full compliance through last summer, peak time, which had into the spring, and then all of a sudden there's a problem. Maybe it's that new part. But their commitment to find a qualified and really good operator is really what they need. Staff is open to considering the 6 months. So but I think that this one, it's not a schedule, but it's strong commitment to the operator. I think that's a big part of the situation.
I feel it's not. I just wanted to say in my remarks to the board and the staff and you. I have seen you come before us for many, many years. I'm sure seeing you here today wasn't the thing that you were most looking forward to, because we go back long. swimming, the surfing, it is one of the most beautiful places in our region, one of the most beautiful beaches. There's been a long history, and we try to give a little bit of a revisionist history of what's taking place, but there is, and including blaming the birds, I mean, there is really a tremendous amount of contamination that's gone on there, and many time schedule orders that were given to you, I think this board of leaders has been more than generous, and I really don't feel that we can do much more than flood the recycling water, which I understand is a great benefit to you. But I still am very concerned about the past history and not having it repeat itself. So I'm very sympathetic to Hilda Bay and their concerns. I'm sympathetic to the thousands of beach goers that go to your beach and the fact that it does cost a lot of money. I understand, but this is a very successful business that's been on there over the years. Everything from parking, restaurants, movies being made there, and so I really think that the fastest we can finally get this into a healthy beach where people can enjoy going there and know that they're not going to get sick is the most important thing that we can do as a board. So what I would like to say is that this time, this order that has been given to you with the dates on page 7-70, 5A through E, is a very good schedule. I have no problems with that schedule at all. But I would like to ask that you either have a change sheet or direct the staff, whatever makes the most sense, that every time one of these dates, A through E, comes up, that we have a report the following month from Mr. Dahlberg and from our staff about whether they're in compliance. And if they're not in compliance, that we take appropriate action because it's just long, it's finally at long last we have to deal with this. And it's gone on far too long. And I am really sorry to see it, to see that we still have to deal with them rather than recycling water. And I think this is the time that we finally have to do something. That's what my request would be, is that we move forward with these dates and that we have a report about a month after whatever makes sense to staff, as close as possible to those deadlines, and that we make sure that they are compliant with these deadlines. So that's fine.
Well, I agree with you, board member. We sit up here and we see people who come before us over and over again, and since 2010 we have been out of compliance 3 times. And I think it's a lot we do in the nurses' public that we can help the water quality. The beach, we have the cafe, and I don't think I would support the 3-month extension. But I do agree that we need to monitor this very closely so that not overlook it. So 3 years from now, we're out of compliance again. I think the responsibility is to the members of the public to remind. Because I think it's been operating for quite some time. It's a well-known place, and I think that you also do have a responsibility as business owners to your clientele. So I'm concerned because your actions have proven in the past that compliance has not been something that has been a priority. And it bothers me because you're operating the restaurant and you're operating other things that are right on the beach. And you know that it's high season for you. I'm not sure why you haven't been closed so that you can take care of those things and you can do more quality stuff on the members of the public. So, when I first read all of this, I usually give business owners the benefit of the doubt. In this case, I feel that we have to monitor you very closely to make sure it happens. You know, and I know that there's a lot of money that's invested,
that's what business is, and if you were making money, you would have gone out of the business. But my biggest concern is the health of these shows. And diseases that they've had in the past. I've heard your statements of goodwill that this kind of focusing on Cascade. Any other comments?
I don't really have much to add, I guess. I'm in agreement with my colleagues. One question I have is there a way? I'm very happy to hear that there's a commitment to get a new operator out there. Is there a way to document that in some fashion? Can we do it before you write that in? Or is that something that is
So what we could do is we could add a provision to the tentative cease and desist order requiring discharge to provide a verbal report in some sort of time. So we can add that into the cease and desist order. Even maybe just a few more minutes to provide
some more. What about the commitment to get a new offer? What about the commitment to get a new operator? Is there some certification requirement for operators?
Yes.
Is that something that's already required?
I think state requires the public system have the operator certification, and we can certainly require for the private system to have the operator certification.
Okay. Yes. Is that something that you would recommend?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to see that.
So, are you asking for the permit to...
And we already have that language in the permit.
Oh, it's already in there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. That's very good stuff. Can you guys point to a number? I missed that. I'm sorry about that. My kid was one of the problems here was with the operator.
Yeah. I'm trying to find that language, and the requirement to have a certified operator is in there. I don't believe it's a very legal concept. I don't think we can say we need to find a new operator, but certainly can say
we can improve this for the operator. As long as there's a commitment on your part to get an operator in there, and seeing your head's not a yes, I'm comfortable with that. In the context of staying close contact with the partners, I'm encouraged to hear that you turn things around up there. That's very
good. Therefore, page 7-031.
031?
Yes, 7-031. And item number 6. The last sentence, anyone employed in the operation of the wastewater treatment plant must be certified pursuant to the Water Quality Code, section 3625 to 3633.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Ms. Matthew,
yeah, Mr. Dobler, can you come up for a minute? I'm glad that you recognize you have an operator problem, and I'm very glad that you're combining these two systems and getting rid of the seepage pits down below, and I'm glad that you're going to be doing some recycling, and we just need you right now to comply with it. To show us that you're doing everything possible to comply with these standards. If you work closely with our staff and you demonstrate compliance and come back to the board at these different points and explain what's going on, I think we'll get a better relationship as we did with the city of Malibu when they showed that they were moving forward. And we know that things go wrong, we know that, but we want you to move forward.
thing that worries me the most is that we have these exceedances starting just when the beach load goes up in the spring and in the summer. And I get asked the question of our staff before, what do? You actually charge it by the person walking in. You know how many cars come in. You know how many people are going to the beach and who's going to the restaurants because they're asking for getting a different treatment inside. How do you know when too many people are there and that your system can't handle it?
Well, let me just clarify. Unfortunately, as of about 2 years ago, we don't know how many people are going in there, and I don't have any control over how many people are going there. The State Lands Commission and the Coastal Commission basically forced open the gates of Paradise Government.
I think what they forced you to do is allow people to walk in the circles. You're not charging them anymore?
It's the general public.
You don't charge people walking in anymore? Because I see pedestrian fees outside your gates.
No, you don't. Not like that. On two occasions, we did try to re-implement a fee for what was called walk-ins. We started calling it a daily beach club membership because we do have the right to charge for the use of our facilities. The problem is implementation of that. Because of what's been reported in the media, because of Coastal Commission's sensitivity to anything that may in any way deter that right for the public, I haven't been able to come up with a way, short of having a police state there to actually control and charge for those uses. So the place is just basically in water. If you come in and you park, then you pay to park. But as far as coming up with a plan to try to charge so that we can limit the number of people that can come in, it's just beyond my ability.
What are you doing to expand your lab? Are you sufficiently expanding your laboratory facilities and reflecting in that the size of the new systems that you're building so that you don't have a problem?
We are. We've essentially been dealing with this for almost 2 years now, so we feel like we have a pretty good handle on what the flows are right now. And I will continue to try to come up with a plan that will charge people for the use of our facilities and limit that.
So I would be very interested in you expanding facilities to make sure that there's no overflows. During the time, and this is something I'd like the staff also answer, during the time before you go into construction to combine the system, and at the point that you're combined, there will be treated, the bacteria is going to be treated the addition would be T-shirt treatment. Is that right?
Correct, the additional.
So what we're concerned about now, what I'm most concerned about now, is bacteria that's going into, that's coming out of the system and is exposing people to danger in the water itself. And at public beaches, we have a posting requirement. Do you have a posting requirement?
Well, LA County does have a posting requirement, and they work with Gila Bay on that right there at the bottom of the creek. At the risk of being argumentative, I kind of resent the implication that we're endangering the public at the beach right there. I swim in that water, my family swim in that water. Several years ago, with the help of the Los Angeles Waterkeeper, because of a concern for these tests that are at the bottom of the creek, we started doing independent sampling in front of our lifeguard tower where most of the public swims. And there wasn't a single exceedance. And that includes on days where taking a sample right at the surf zone at the bottom of the creek where tell me I'm making stuff up.
Well, we're not talking about the creek now. We're talking about your septic system and your sewer system. So let's not get argumentative. I don't need to get argumentative. But I want to make sure that the staff know that the right procedures are in place so that when these exceedances happen, people at least know that there's been an exceedance and that they can make the best decisions about whether they're going to go. We have that in publications. It says that the county is doing that here. Can the staff answer that question, please?
I'm sorry, I missed the question at the comments.
The question was, given the fact that Mr. Dahlberg said that there is the county does do water quality testing, and sensors at the beach, and we have water quality testing from the system, if we know that there's a danger of people being exposed to bacteria in the water, is there a closure policy or is there a signage policy? We have signage policies at other beaches. This is a beach that's looked like the mother's beach, very low surf. There's not a lot of circulation there. People love to bring their little children there. There's hundreds of kids. I don't mean to denigrate. This is a fabulous place to bring their kids. But I think that people ought to know if there's a sequence in that beach that will experience a problem that's going to get going to as soon as they do the transition to the new system. It's going to go away because they'll have a better disinfection system further away from the beach. But until then, what are we going to do to make sure people are
The short answer is that people are going to have to look out to you. I mean, we just do not have the resources and the ability to
test each other. We do that. I was not suggesting that we go down there and post the beach. I was suggesting how we can be sure that there are the same mechanisms in place as there are at public beaches so that when there are exceedances, just notifying somebody at county beaches and harbors that they can.
Yeah, we will initiate that inquiry with the County Department of Beaches and Harbors as well as the County Department of Health to inquire what the current notification procedures are at this beach, and we will report back to you.
Okay, I don't think we need to make that part of this agreement, but I would really appreciate that happening.
Yes,
with that, I also would like to make a motion. Current staff and staff can have any changes to offer
as we add a language for the local report.
Are you ready for that, Ken?
There will be a new 5F. Let me call the next page on the other end.
7-070.
Okay.
A
new 5F.
That's the base number.
That's
the base. Yeah, that's the base page.
Right.
And what it would say is after each date listed in subsections A through E above, the discharger shall provide a verbal report at the next regular scheduled board meeting pertaining to compliance or lack thereof with the requirement. So we didn't recommend putting in, let's say, a 1 month just in case you have board meetings and let's say you don't have a board meeting a certain month, but it would be the next regularly scheduled.
So this is a new items 5F?
5F.
Okay. Are there any other changes?
Yes, I did level up with them. I did explain that the difference with Water Code Section 13.08 and the measurement pumps only find NPDES permits. I think they understand more about what we can do. If there are, I think staff said, we're going to keep a close eye on the schedule and hopefully there's no issue. But if there is a way that the board can reopen the cease and desist order and put in those types of penalties. Also, there's always the board can always take enforcement action. And there is a reopener provision. We always put those in, but it's number 12 on 17-072. It's a standard provision, but we can reopen the cease.
So with that, are there any other changes that have been made? I would like to make that a motion for staff, including the new item 5F on page 7-0070.
And the change sheet.
And the change sheet, of course.
Okay.
Roll call vote, Ms. Martin.
Ms. Dodden?
Yes.
Ms. Blitzel?
Yes.
Ms. Munoz?
Yes.
Mr. Stringer?
Yes.
Commissioner?
Yes.
Motion carries.
We are now going to adjourn day one of our current meeting. Day two will be held tomorrow at the City of Santa Maria Council Chambers, and the meeting will begin at 9 a.m. We have a motion to adjourn.
something like that.